be starting with USASA for their presentation. USASA. 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 Welcome, Chairperson, for the board of USASA. I'm told that you are brand new board. I'm not sure you are brand new from the box, but I'm told you are brand new. You are most welcome, and the other non-executive members, board members, which are with you. I don't know who's acting to lead the executive, but whoever is leading the executive and his or her team. Oh, by the way, for the caretaker. Now I remember the gentleman will be leading. Dr. Vilakazi in the committee is called a gentleman. So a gentleman will mean Dr. Vilakazi. So from time to time when we say a gentleman, it relates to Dr. Vilakazi. So all the other men here, they just lose that title of a gentleman. It's only accorded to Dr. Vilaka. So don't be surprised when we do that. That's what he is here, a gentleman. Welcome the other board members from the other entities. I see the ex-deputy chairperson of SAPC is here, and the other board members. I also see Nemipa, chairperson, she's here, and the other board members and the relevant executives. But we'll talk to you when it's your turn. Now is your first turn to take us through their presentation. But before you proceed, you don't have to go into details of your presentation. Members have read the document. They are ready to ask questions. So when you do your presentation, you will be just high flying. And then when you finish to do your high flying, my advice is that you must then check out this document. Once you finish your presentation, you must then check out this document. Because your question probably mostly will come from here on this document and so on. But I must also caution that when you respond, can you please respond page by page? If members, they ask through the pages, you must note the pages so that when you respond page by page in terms of their question, so that it becomes easier for them to follow and all of us in terms of their question. Over to you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Chair, and to the Honorable Member. I would like to start by appreciating this opportunity that you've been given this morning to be able to present the annual report as well as at a later stage the first quarterly report of the Universal Services and Access Agency of South Africa. Let me start, Chairperson, as part of my opening remarks by indicating the fact that we are a new board, as you have indicated earlier. We started our term of office on the 1st of September 2012. If you'll allow me, Honorable Chair, that I introduce the board members who are present this morning. It's myself as the chair, here, Phumla Khadebe, and seated next to me on my right is Mr. Adimo Chava, and seated next to her is Mr. Sam Lidwaba. Seated somewhere there at the back is Ms. Charlotte Mampane. Let me quickly indicate, Mr. Chairperson, that we have got two board members who couldn't make it this morning due to other commitments that had previously been arranged, Mr. Ginosi Moroka, as well as Mr. Raj Lal Bahadur. There are six of us currently on the board, and the provisions for this particular board is the fact that there has to be seven members. Therefore, we are still awaiting the Minister for the confirmation of a seventh member as and when she is ready to do so. I am surrounded, Honorable Chair, by a team of staff members who are assisting us as we are coming into this organization. As indicated by yourself, seated next to me is Dr. Sam Vilakazi, who's the executive caretaker.
Gentleman.
Oh, the gentleman next to me. Thank you. And then behind me we have a team. And you would note chair, which would also confirm the remarks that I will be making, that we are still in South Africa, irrespective of the fact that I'm accompanied by the acting CFO, Ms. Linda Ngwembe, accompanied also by the acting executive business development services, Mr. Winnie Lelama, also accompanied by the acting executive corporate services, Mr. Vusi Zogo. Next to him then is the acting executive performance manager, Ms. Makoso Moilwa. Fortunately, we have our chief internal auditor just behind me, Mr. Jimmy Mashiane. He's not acting, he's there. Yes. And then I'm together this morning with Ms. Honse Dlamini from our secretariat. Having said that then, Chair, and the honorable members, let me start by making a remark and state the fact that the picture that is painted by our annual report is not as rosy as we'd expect it to be. We will all recall to the honorable members this morning stating that the organization has been beset by a number of financial mismanagement problems. We have been faced with dismissals and exits of the board. There has been suspension of senior staff members. In certain instances, this has been followed by some resignations. Let me remind the Honorable House of the fact that they would recall that sometime during June last year, the audit committee of USASA identified that there were some problems arising from the payments which had been made. Subsequent to that, they requested that there should be a financial review, which was then followed around September 2011 by the decision of the board at that time to institute forensic audit of the company. Let me also hasten to mention the fact that around October then, suspensions of the people who were identified to be involved in the misdemeanor were suspended. The committee would know that in around November, the board was then relieved out of its function. The disciplinary action within the company then started around December 2011. And I would indicate later where we are, Honorable Chair, of the fact that the disciplinary action is still continuing, although in the interim, the CEO then resigned, as well as the executive of business development also resigned, whereas the other staff members are still undergoing disciplinary action. On Friday, last week, on the 5th of October, this board then received formally the forensic report as well as the value for money report, which we then interrogated and began to understand as to what were the issues that were involved here. The board then recognized and confirmed that the outcomes that are indicated in the report are confirming that the disciplinary action that is taking place should definitely continue and be expedited as soon as possible in order to also increase the level of stability within the organization. And we're quite confident also during these discussions to say, given the information, particularly the value for money report that we've received from a forensic company, indicates very clearly the fact that there is every reason to begin to take civil action for us to be able to recover our money, because we have to find a way of recovering, if I'm not mistaken, colleagues would correct me here, around about 94 million, which 92 million we found it out. So we have to find a way of recovering that lost money. But linked to that directly, honorable members, is the fact that it is inevitable that we have to take criminal action or bring about prosecution for those involved. So these are some of the things that the board is looking at, and we are discussing it, and we should be in a position to come out with a firm decision as to what are the exact steps that we should be taking. And let me hasten that we should be in a position to do that within the next 2 weeks or so. But most importantly, the Honorable Chair and members, is the fact that our target at this moment is to bring stability within the organization and ensure that the organization is in a position to begin to move and implement some of the projects, particularly as the report would show, And also the first quarter report does indicate that there were certain deliverables that we have not yet been able to achieve. And therefore we're saying the sooner we are able to arrest that instability, if I were to use the term in inverted commas, and bring about the confidence within the staff, we should then be in a position to proceed and do what is expected of this organization in reaching out to the communities where there has to be universal access as well as ICT services to the different communities. Therefore, let me at this stage then, therefore, Honorable Chair, pause in terms of my introductory remarks and general remarks on the state of the organization and hand over to the gentleman who will then take us through the performance of the organization in the last financial year. Thanks a lot.
Honorable Chair, Honorable Members, I think the Chairperson has laid the foundation. What I'm going to be taking the committee through would be the projects that were planned for the year under review, as well as the actual performance. But I think it's important to indicate, even before going into the projects, that the Chairperson has indicated that the picture does not really look good, simply because when you walk into an organization which is bleeding, it cannot just be treated as business as usual to say let's just continue spending on projects and money leaving, but rather you have to pause and begin to understand what are the challenges and what are the problems before projects could be implemented, and therefore that had a negative impact on the projects. I'll start with the first project, which deals with the DTT. Which was the target there was to plan and design broadcasting digital migration program. The first quarter there, we were looking at establishing partnership with public and private sector. This has been done. I must indicate that this is one project where USASA has really made significant progress in terms of entering into partnerships with the likes of SAPO, and making sure that, for example, things like the means test are developed and so on. Design the systems and processes for subsidies also that is in place. Basically, this refers to the criteria that will be used to allocate subsidies to the poor households. In the second quarter, there was an intention to implement a pilot system and processes for the subsidies. This could not be achieved. I must indicate that the DTT project, by its nature, it depends on many other factors. For example, there are players that are involved. You have the SABC involved, you have Centec involved, and so on. You have the Department of Communications involved to make sure that the issues of procurement of set-top boxes is addressed. So in this case, the deliverables for the second quarter were not achieved. The implementation of the STB scheme of ownership model, like I did indicate, that this is dependent on the availability of set-top boxes in the market, and that process will only be kicking off now in October because the department has almost finalizing the appointment of the manufacturers who will make sure that the set-top boxes are in the market, and therefore, when you implement the scheme of ownership model, you have to have set-top boxes in the market. And of course, the fourth quarter was going to be the continuation of that process, which is dependent on also on the availability of set-top boxes. The second area was the was around broadband, which focused on one underserviced providing broadband infrastructure in one underserviced area. I think it's specifically in this case, the target was to assist the Greater Zane municipality with broadband network. The groundwork was done in terms of gathering the requirements, consolidation of the business case, as well as the appointment of the service provider to do the network design. But then halfway through, there was a bit of a challenge in terms of the agency proceeding to finalize this, because I'm sure the committee will also recall that one of the recommendations that came from the committee was that where there are similar projects scattered through the agency,
oversight, also sitting within the department, also sitting in Centec. And therefore, there was a deliberate decision that was taken to say, how do we explain to the public out there the role of USASA in broadband? How do we explain the role of Centec in broadband? And how do we also explain the role of the department in broadband? Therefore, the view that was taken at the time was that it will then make sense to consolidate so that when we implement, and of course the implementation has to be guided by the broadband policy, the strategy, and the implementation plan, which is driven by the Department of Communications, which is almost at, in the final stage as we speak. Therefore, it will be important that that document becomes a guide that directs all the key players as to which direction to go in as far as broadband is concerned. So in this instance, the agency could not proceed to do the actual rollout of broadband in Zanzibar. The next area is around the implementation of rapid deployment strategy, which deals with the first quarter we're looking at establishing 20 access centers. This target was not achieved. The second quarter we're looking at 24. This was also not achieved. I must indicate that I did mention earlier on that it becomes very difficult to continue in a situation where money has just disappeared, because you first have to fix the processes. You first have to fix the system so that you don't have a repeat. And therefore, that has that had an impact on the project. And of course, during this period, it was a time when the forensic investigation as well as value for money audit was unfolding, and therefore some of the holes in the system had to be closed to make sure that when we move, we are very sure of what we're doing. The next area was around the development of measurable ICT access and impact indicators. I must indicate that the targets that were put under this, most of them were achieved. For example, the first one in the list of agreed upon ICT access and impact indicators, baseline research, identification of the source of information, interactions with Statistics South Africa, and of course the engagement of possible sources of information for indicators. All this were done mainly because this work did not really involve having to go through the procurement route, which is what was causing a problem and had to be addressed. The second issue, which links to the earlier issue on the feasibility study on national broadband, it is a target that was put by USASA, but then given the background that I've already outlined of the department taking a view that broadband has to be informed by a national policy strategy and a plan at the national level, USASA could not therefore proceed to conduct this. I mean, as honorable members and honorable chair could see that the target was around the feasibility study on national broadband. Now, when you look at it closer, this becomes if I may use the word, a competence of the Department of Communications, and therefore the agencies have to then take a lead from that guide provided by the department. So this work has also not been achieved. So those were the projects that were put forward for the financial year. I must indicate, honorable members and chair, that one of the or the approach that USASA took in the year under review, also in the current financial year, was that it's better to put fewer targets and try to rally everyone and all the resources behind those targets, because you put 200 in the targets and it becomes a problem when the time for reporting comes. A similar picture, I'm sure honorable members will see it when we deal with the year with the current financial year, which of course will be next year, that USASA also took a similar approach of making sure that we deal with about just 5 targets and try to work around those targets. In terms of the budgetary allocation, the agency had a budget of 83.2 million, of which 92% was spent during the financial year. mainly on four items. That would be the compensation of employees, capital expenditure, operational expenditure, and of course about 7 million was not spent. I must indicate that the budget of the agency, USASA, it's not really, there's very little for projects under the agency budget, but it's just more to do with the capital expenditure, I mean salaries, capital expenditures there and there, and some of the operational expenditure. And I did indicate that the 7 million surplus was not spent, and of course that was allocated to the TCC project for capacity building, and the rollover has been requested in this regard, and the agency had a net cash flow of 15.6 million. Coming to the USAF, which is the biggest component within USASA, the fund was allocated a total budget of 260.9 million, and 98% of this amount was not spent. This may look like it's a bit shocking, but the reality is that the bulk of this money goes to set-top boxes subsidies. And during the year under review, we were nowhere closer to even begin to dish out subsidies. And therefore, this, simply because this money is reinvested, you can't use it on any other thing. It had to be, rolled over. And of course, a rollover request has been presented to National Treasury. The next issue is the rapid deployment, which I spoke about earlier on, that this area also could not move due to the challenges that the agency was faced with, as well as the handover project and the broadband infrastructure, which I've already explained that a decision has been taken that the national department, which is the DOC, has to then give guidance in terms of broadband policy, the strategy, and the implementation plan. Of course, the chairperson spoke about the issue of instability. I would not emphasize on that. And what we have done, the rollover request has been presented to National Treasury, of course, with reasons why the money could not be spent. If we could just zoom into the audit issues, the agency obtained an unqualified audit opinion, of course, with emphasis of matters, as reflected below. There's about three key areas. The first area is around the fruitless administrative expenditure of about 1 million due to the rental of offices that were not occupied, 20% due to the penalties and interest for late payments to South African Revenue Services, and the remainder of the amount due to amount paid to for utilization of venue for capital workshop. I must indicate that this may come as a bit of a surprise that there was a fruitless and wasteful expenditure of 1 million for offices that were not occupied. This is one of the areas that is currently being addressed. What we had to do, we had to do a stock take of what it is that is existing in the provinces. We took a deliberate decision to cancel some of these leases. We're in the process of consolidating because we were of the view that we cannot continue with a situation where there are offices and there are no people in there. So some of these contracts have been cancelled. We've initiated a process with the landlords to effect the cancellations, and the legal team is just finalizing some of the areas. But the bulk of some of these offices, they have been addressed. There's just a few that is remaining. The second area is around irregular expenditure of 42 million. 91% of this is as a result of non-compliance with the bidding process. And these are some of the matters that led to forensic investigations because procurement processes were not followed. And of course, then the 58% of this relates to incidents from 2010, but were only reported in 11-12. And I'm sure Honorable Chair and members would recall that during the financial year 2010-11, particularly around March, that was the time when a lot of money left USASA just before end of the financial year. And therefore, we had to look into all of these things. We had to look at all these amounts, and we took a decision that they need to be disclosed accordingly. The other matters relating to the audit of performance information as a result of the SMART criteria, of course, the targets were not SMART, for example, specific, measurable, achievable, realistic, and timely. This is one area that has been identified during the audit, and it is also being addressed. In fact, in the current strategic plan of USASA, which is being implemented in the current financial year, this matter has been addressed to make sure that we do not go back to a similar situation. From the fund also obtained an unqualified audit opinion with the following matters of emphasis. The first one is the material underspending of 220 million. This is for set-top boxes, and I did indicate that the expenditure here is dependent on the availability of set-top boxes so that subsidies can then be triggered. Of course, there was an issue around the fruitless and wasteful expenditure of about 3.7 million, which relates to payments made to Telkom and Centec for internet connectivity while the connection was not there. And therefore, we have initiated a process to make sure that this is corrected and the situation, I think, will turn around because there will be, where possible, if the fund has to be effected, that will be taken. And if Centec and Telkom have to do what is supposed to be done, then the board is going to make sure that those things are put in place. Irregular expenditure, 19.4 million. Once again, this amount relates to procurement process during the financial year 2010-11, but it was discovered and reported in 11-12. And of course, the 24% due to unauthorized fund transfer from the USAF to USASA, there was a cash flow problem, and therefore the money was transferred from the fund to USASA. There are measures that have been put in place to make sure that this does not happen going forward, because we are of the view that once the amount has been ring-fenced and there's a pressing need to use it elsewhere, an appropriate authorization has to be obtained with valid reasons, of course, as to why this is done. In terms of the rollover request from the USASA budget, the agency itself, we have put in about 8 million, and from the USAF budget, it's about 258 million, total rollover being the 266 million. About 220 million here really talks to the subsidies of the set-top boxes, which I spoke to earlier. I think I'll pause the chair and hand over to the chairperson.
Thanks once again, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members. Just perhaps then to draw towards conclusion of our presentation on the annual report to indicate and confirm what I said earlier, that the then CEO of the company resigned, and the board, when we said during our first meeting on Friday, has started a process of moving very quickly to replace the CEO, and we're setting ourselves the target that we should have a new CEO, if all goes well, by the 1st of January 2013, but we're still gunning for the fact that we might be fortunate and have a new person starting during December, which would be for a bonus for us. I would like to confirm the fact that we had three executive managers who are on suspension, and one of them, the executive manager business development, has since resigned during the process, and one of the actions that the board has instituted on Friday was also the fact that we're going to go out on advertisement of this particular post, because this is where the crux of the business of USASA is, and we are hoping that we'd also be in a position to fill up this post very early in the new year. And the other people who also are on suspension is the senior manager supply chain management, as well as the senior manager ICT. Here we also mentioning, honorable members, the fact that the sooner we can bring stability to the organization, the sooner we can also be in a position to continue with the implementation of our projects. Let me continue also to confirm the fact that the disciplinary process then started during January, and there was a lull at some stage, as well as there were some delays because the employees who are being disciplined here, amongst others, perhaps for the information of the Honourable House, was the fact that somewhere they brought legal action even against ourselves, saying the executive caretakers have no authority of instituting legal action. So there were quite a number of undue delays that took place, but it is continuing. I think if my information is correct, there is a fitting taking place early next week. And also the fact that the presiding officer was acting as a judge and therefore couldn't sit in during our process, that also on its own created a delay. So it's been confirmed that actually there is a sitting tomorrow in continuation of this. And we are anticipating that by the end of November or early December, we should be in a position to complete this process. We're keeping our fingers crossed and watching the process very closely. As I conclude, Honourable House, is the fact that the board met and we do have committees in place which were appointed on Friday, and I'm confirming that we are working vigorously to appoint the CEO, as well as I forgot to mention the fact that the company secretary also resigned in the process, I suppose due to the instability within the company, but also we are advertising this particular post. We're watching, as I indicated, the disciplinary processes. And I want to believe that one of the things that has been and we spoke as a board amongst ourselves is the challenge that we have to be seen to be adhering to, that of enhancing as well as tightening corporate governance issues within the company and in the process making sure that there is total stability within the organization. So our focus is definitely there in ensuring that the organization moves forward. And one of the critical other things that we shall be looking at is a general review of the organization. We are made to understand that this didn't come about because we have arrived. This is a thing that has already been on the table. So we are also closely looking at. So that the organization also is therefore then in a position to respond to the expectations that are out there in terms of deliverables. I think therefore Honorable Chair, I've covered, yes, all the points that have to be covered, and we would like to once again thank this opportunity, and we are definitely readily available to then take comments and questions that may arise. But let me also hasten to the fact that we are there and readily available to present our progress in terms of how we stabilize the organization at a date and a time to be decided upon by the Honorable Committee in due course. Thanks a lot, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson, and the gentlemen, Honorable Shin, Honorable Shiniman, Erizoma, Stein, Killen, Brochen, Kekane, welcome, Honorable Murutua, Honorable Shin.
Thank you, Chairperson, and I appreciate that it's difficult for us to challenge much of the gloss that you've put over, because you're fairly new. The people we should perhaps be thundering on against are not here. However, this report is for the year ending March, and so some of the people that I think are in acting positions were in, I'm talking about the administration, not the board, were in positions, and obviously we would need some sort of clarity on who was responsible for what then, but I see they're still here. You didn't mention at all one of the main findings the Auditor General gave us was that about 4 million rand had been taken from the Universal Service Fund to pay the PAYE debt of USASA. Now, as you said yourself, sir, this money is ring-fenced. It cannot be used for anything else. I'm wanting to know if the board is intending to take disciplinary and perhaps criminal action against the person or persons who authorized that withdrawal of money from the fund to pay USASA's debts. I think that's unacceptable, and there must be a very, very firm action taken against that, and it wasn't mentioned at all in the presentation. I would also like to look at the bonuses that were paid to the senior executive management, who are all here today, most of them are here today, in acting positions. Now, bearing in mind that the Auditor General said that the accounting authorities did not submit reports on time, did not ensure public entity maintains effective and efficient management, did not ensure performance management systems were in place, did not take effective and appropriate steps to prevent fruitless expenditure, didn't stop the executive management. The CEO,
where are you reading?
I'm looking on page 72. Yeah. Page 72. The acting CFO, at the end of the year, got 44,000 Rand performance bonus. The acting business development services manager got 49,000 Rand performance bonus. The manager, acting performance management, got 48,000 Rand performance bonus. This is for an organization that is not performing well, has done very little achievements during the past year, but that doesn't stop the executive management from rewarding themselves financially. This looting has to stop. It really does, because one actually wonders what the value of a USASA is at this stage. And, you know, frankly, I wonder at it at all. Also, one wants to know, in the year in which things were falling apart financially, why 682,000 was spent on overseas travel. That's up 200,000 on the year before. There are of very many things. The bonus payments, actually, for this year totaled 1.99 million. That's nearly 2 million rand. But that's 1.5 million rand in extra bonuses on the previous year. This is in a year when the enterprise is falling to bits. What on earth? I mean, is there no shame in this organization? I think I'll leave it there, because there's plenty of other things to go on which I'm sure my colleagues will pursue.
I hope they are not demanding bonuses again under this situation, following the two figures. Yes. Lesoma? Unless you are married.
No.
I know now people, when they get married, they change their name. Thank you.
No,
Jay,
you said I must stop to phoning him and SMSing him at 1 o'clock a.m., so there's no link. Thank you. Thank you, Honorable Chair. And thank you, gentlemen, and the chairperson of the SASA. And I'm sure, madam, you do appreciate that, although you are fairly new. But you know when you accepted the nomination and also the appointment, what is in there. So you are equally accountable at the same time in terms of the oversight role, unfortunately. And I'm sure also in terms of chair, in terms of the board members that have got other commitments, it's not going to be a perpetual behavior in terms of them having other commitments, having accepted the appointment to be in the SASA board to assist the nation to put things right. Two chairs. Unfortunately, the gentleman, the caretaker, he's also from DOC. And I asked this question, and I was happy yesterday, Chair, in your closing remarks that you made that emphasis that DOC must be present when these entities make presentations, because we are dealing with it yesterday, but we are more also interested moving forward what needs to be happened. My fundamental question would be to the gentleman, through you, Honorable Chair, from November, towards the end of November, which is basically like plus minus 9 months. What changes have you been administratively able to bring? That will lead then to the question of bonuses now under AI. That this actors, they were appointed because we had a more or less a sense of comfort that sense of business continuity and all those things, they will do a better job. They also, that's why they didn't resign, because they appreciated the challenge that USASA have, and they wanted to assist the government. Is the performance bonuses then being paid linked to the declared savings or profits. Whatever reasons that you presented, gentlemen, through your chair. Because if it then is based on financial, then I will have a problem because the core mandate of the entity is not done. If you go to all the pages without making quoting the pages from 8, 9, 11, 12, 13 in terms of the performance and the said agreed targets, probably 20% achieved, but we know that it's not a surprise. Because even during our oversight visits, you could see that even the asset management approach was not in existence. The other one, Chair, when you go to audit services, which is part of the asset management that I've just spoken about, and also the core business, but also the other one, because we could see that the institution as a whole was in ICU, SDOC now. I don't get a feel. Within plus minus nine months, what have we done to make sure that when it comes this time, we're a little bit happy? We're not so embarrassed to say we're not so sure what to explain to the nation with the promise that we made through the USAID. Chair, obviously the financial management, irregular expenditure and all those things, probably let me not waste time, Chair, and say that we are looking forward when we are dealing with the first quarter report. What commitments are we going to make? Because I will have a serious challenge where you are going to have lesser targets, overlooking the core mandate of the entity. And I'm sure those targets also are going to be measurable, because we cannot continuously have targets that are unmeasurable, just to tick the box. I'm not talking about reporting and attending TC meetings, coming and making presents. Those are requirements, general requirements that it's not like housekeeping matters, but the actual that makes the USASA tick. For me, Chair, I'm more interested on that. I'm not going to deal with the figures because we all appreciate the challenge that we have. But what is the role of DOC on this matter? Thank you, Chair.
Thanks, Chair, and congratulations, or so should I say commiserations, to the new board on your appointment, and I'll qualify why I say that. Chair, I want to start by saying that during our oversight visit to Gauteng, we visited the head office of USASA, and I thought I should raise this here because I think it's something that the new board needs to seriously look into. Firstly, I want to say that I think that the offices of USASA are in the most inaccessible part of Gauteng that they could have possibly found. It's based in an office park off the highway near Kailami. I don't know why they're in that office park. It's a fancy office park. The offices are extremely fancy. And I'm not sure whether they are meant to be a corporate company that is servicing the top end of the market, or whether they are supposed to be an organization that is supposed to be servicing the most needy areas in our country with internet access. I want to submit and request that the board seriously consider relocating to a more accessible premises. We asked the question where we were there, why are they situated there, and we were told that at one stage they were actually situated in more accessible premises in Johannesburg. And to be quite honest, I don't understand why USASA is where they are. If anybody is wanting to access USASA, they can't get there. It's not on a taxi route, it's not on a train route, or anything like that. Even we got a bit lost trying to get there. That's the first thing I want to raise.
You always get lost.
No, I don't. No. My chair is just grumpy badly, eh? That's the first point. And I understand you're a new board and you haven't been in there for long. It's a request that I are making, please could you reconsider and really have a look at whether you're the best located position, place, as your offices. The second thing is that we had a interaction with staff at your offices. And I want to just say that they spoke to us in front of the senior management that were there that day. And you have a staff, when we were there in July, it was around about July, I think, is it? Or just before that, June, yeah, June, that highly demoralized, highly demotivated, and raised some rather shocking stuff with us that's going on. It then begs the question as to what actually is happening in that office there in Midrand. And hopefully yourselves as the new board would be able to get to a grip. But certainly some of the things that the staff were raising with us, and I'm sure we can provide you with some of the minutes that were taken there. I've also got correspondence that's been sent to me after that visit. But certainly it indicated that nobody knew what was going on. And the staff were just indicating how they were, some of them were just badly treated. There seemed to be a lack of accountability from senior management. Many of them wanting to get involved and help do things, but they just felt that they were an organization that was going nowhere. I thought I should raise those points at the start. But in your annual report, if I can go there, I'm trying to find where your annual report indicates the number of telecentres that USASA is involved in around the country. Because I would have thought that would have been an important piece of information that is part of your annual report, that does give us a status, etc. But I don't find anything. And so that's something that that seems to be missing. Then I've gone through, let me just say this as well, that I joined this committee in February this year, and on the three oversight visits that we've been on, I haven't been very impressed with the condition and state of telecentres where USASA is involved in. And in fact, one of the telecentres at the very first one that I went to, and I was quite excited because going to a telecentre in a rural area to be able to see how people are being able to access IT, one of government's key strategies, only to find when we got there the place was locked and totally dysfunctional. And that's been pretty much the experience. Many of them dysfunctional. Equipment in some is working and others is not working. So I think it's something that's really got to be looked into, because that's one of your key mandates, core mandates. And I see actually in your in the report, you actually are talking about rolling out even more centres in the 2012-2013, a total of 65 ICT centres. But I would want to submit that I think really, before you start rolling out new ones, fix the ones that are currently there. Really, for me, that would be my priority. Fix what's there before we start rolling out. So that's something else I thought I should point out. But I went through the annual report, and it starts on page 8, all the way through until, there's so many highlight marks I've made here, page 36, yeah, until page 36. And you've got a whole lot of, I think these are targets, objectives, etc. Most of them, large numbers, just not achieved. I've read through some of them, but it's actually quite worrying. because obviously these were targets, goals, etc., that were set at the start of the previous, at the start of the year under review. And I haven't counted against what's achieved and what's not achieved, but if I look at the highlighting of major, large, most of them, probably the large percentage, are not achieved at all. And I'd like to get an indication as to why is that? I suspect maybe it's got to do with problems in management, just from the few things that we've picked up. And then the unauthorized expenditure.
SAPC, have you brought your choir?
The unauthorized or the irregular, fruitless and wasteful expenditure under the USAF fund. It's on page 79 of your annual report. Also quite worrying that money has been spent where, in fact, for internet connectivity, and then you only find out later there's nothing there. So I think, as I finish, my question really want to be is your presentation says speeding up of disciplinary actions. Well, criminal actions, whatever, but speeding up. But can we get a time frame? I know you did, I think you did indicate a couple of things, but can we get a time frame by when we expect to see these things being completed and brought to finalization? And can we get an assurance that there are going to be better controls in this current financial year? Because I want to say that my suspicion is that the reason why you've got so much irregular, fruitless, wasteful expenditure taking place is that the controls are not there. The controls are not there. And then I think, and so I don't think you should just be considering action or hope against the individuals concerned. I think you should take action against the senior management. Because if the controls were there, these things shouldn't be happening. Also, the last thing I want to raise is that, maybe it's not for me to raise, but I think it is the remuneration packages. These are big amounts that people are earning. They are on page 72 of the annual report. They're big amounts. Now, the status, the current state of USASA, I would want to submit that the board should consider introducing salary cuts. Because the performance of USASA, based on what I've seen on the ground and based on what I heard at your offices in Midrand, doesn't warrant the kind of salaries here. Maybe I'll now be unpopular with USASA, that's fine. But really I would want to say that if it were in my power, I would recommend serious salary cuts until the organization gets into a place where it's actually doing what it's supposed to be doing. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Sneeman. Main thing.
Thank you.
I'm trying to mix this thing. It can't be, you see, so I'm trying to mix. We'll come with your bright red color in the mix. Then,
Chairperson, thank you very much. First of all, I want to ask Honorable Schneeman to make that a formal proposal so that I can second it, your last suggestion. And I think as a committee, we're obviously going to be to sort of regroup after everybody has been to us, and we're going to look at things. And I'm certainly going to put forward some very far-ranging proposals that the committee should, in fact, propose in our recommendations to Parliament, Chairperson. just as a precursor. Now, let me say right from the beginning that I acknowledge the situation, the change of board, all those sorts of things. But as some of my colleagues have said, you step into it with your eyes open. And I'm not going to accept it as an excuse for what has happened, even though there may very well be legitimate reasons. Before I go to the report, Chairperson, I want to address some of the comments that were made in the opening remarks. One of them was to arrest the instability. Now, you indicated that when you stepped into your new position that you were all for arresting the instability. And I think if we look at the financial year under discussion, you were probably there for the best part of, I don't know, 4 months or 5 months at the most. 3 months. Not even 3 months. But the fact of the matter is that it was, and yes, the management was there. But from what I saw there were some people appointed in November of 2011. And I don't know how much time you actually need to arrest the instability, because it does certainly seem to be, and from what my colleague said once again, what we saw this particular year, it does seem to be continuing. It was said that the holes in the system need to be closed before moving on. It's clear that the holes haven't been closed, and it's clear that there hasn't been any movement forward. Now, how much longer do we need before there's going to be movement forward? Do we need to shut this entity down for 2 or 3 months, plug all the holes, and then almost start afresh? Is that the intention? It was suggested there were too many targets and that they're not achievable. And I know it's a number you picked out of the air, but you said, for example, perhaps we should only have 5 targets. Now, I ask this at every single presentation. When you set targets, I would imagine, I would like to believe, that you set them against the budget that you've got. And that if you've got X amount of money, that you're not going to get 90 targets if you can't budget for them. So when you tell me you've got 90 targets and this is your budget, I assume that you've allocated money to each one of those. So the assertion that, you know, perhaps too many targets, I'm putting it to you that you are not doing your homework in terms of aligning your targets with the money available. In other words, you're choosing targets, you're not allocating or costing them, and you therefore don't know how much it's going to cost. And I'm saying this, although I'm addressing you, I'm talking about in general for all the, not only the entities, the departments as well. That appears to be what is happening. Because the Honorable Schneeman said he didn't know what your achievements were, but if I'm not mistaken, and I'll get to it, it was something like 9%. 9% of the targets. And yet you've spent, so I would expect something in the order of, I don't know, 8 to 12 or 14% of your budget to be spent. Because it has to be linked to the target. Why do you spend almost your entire budget, but you don't achieve your target? So what is the money being spent on? On salaries and bonuses. In fact, the comment was made. There's very little
in
the budget.
What I was saying, I don't know what they are doing or you are saying, but you seem to be causing chaos. Those three members there, they seem to be unstable now. The instability now has crossed over to the members themselves. Probably it's what you are saying, but you can proceed this way.
I think the stage where we're actually going to all get up and we're going to start a revolution about this. We're going to ask for resignations. We're just not going to throw stones, don't you? The actual statement was made that there's very little in the budget for projects, but it's mostly operating expenditure. I find that ludicrous.
Honorable Brutu, I think it's better if I can't see her if we're going to toy.
When I'm done, I'll swap seats with her, then you can see. I find that ludicrous because the whole reason for your existence is because there are very specific projects that need to be completed. So you know, it confirms what I said earlier, that the money is for operating expenses and nothing else. The other statement, and this is the last one, Mr. Vilakazi said he was of the view that we cannot continue with offices that are not being used. Again, that is the obvious thing. We can't have offices that are not being used. I cannot believe that, and it's certainly not personal, and I hope you don't hold our little exercise yesterday against me, But I cannot believe that a man with your knowledge would even make a statement like that, that you are of the view that the officers that are not being, you cannot continue with it. It should never have started in the first place. It should never have happened. Never mind continuing with it. Let me now go to the annual report, Chairperson, very briefly. Excuse me. And yes, I again concur with the Honourable Schliemann in terms of, I would also strongly suggest that we fix the ones that are not working, and by far the majority of them, and I'm talking about the two song centres, are not working. There's no point putting new ones there if the existing ones don't work. I made a statement in my speech, Chairperson, my budget speech, that there is nothing worse, and I was referring to the one you referred to, Honourable Schliemann. There is nothing worse for somebody than the illusion of having something and not having it. I put it to you that those communities are actually better off if they didn't have it in the first place than if the illusion is that there's something there and it's all locked up and it's not being used. So it's one of the recommendations perhaps that we should be looking at strongly as well, Chairperson. Then just going into the CEO's office on page 8, and this links up with a lot of what my colleagues have been saying. I mean, implement performance rewards. It says not achieved. Performance reward guidelines rejected by dissolved board. Now, you've got guidelines that were rejected, but they were performance awards allocated. So which guidelines was used to, in fact, pay out those performance rewards? Then I want to go to 13, page 13, and this is conduct internal audits. Now, there's four quarters. There were targets there for four quarters, and this has got to do with the internal court audits, which is relates very strongly to what the Auditor General found, and not a single one of them has been achieved. I don't even want to read through this, but you can go through them. Conduct follow-up audits on previously completed audit projects. Not achieved. In other words, it sounds to me, and I may be wrong, but the responsible people didn't go back and see what did the Auditor General identify the previous year and the year before that, and the thing that we need to address. Now, this is what this report tells me, and if I read it wrong, then I apologize, but this is what I'm getting out of it. And again, I don't necessarily want to refer to yesterday, but I think Mama Story, we were accused of not reading, understanding the English properly at one stage, I think. So perhaps that is one of those instances. But that is what I read. I want to very quickly go to page 33 and 34 and 35 and 36. I mean, just look at those, that lot. And again, one of the critical things that the Auditor General identified was the IT sector. Now, we're supposed to be, and when I say we, I'm talking about us and in the sector, we're supposed to be the experts. We put out the ICT centers and all sorts of things. The gaps have been identified, right from the national department through to all the entities. And you look at these here. Look at the implement a wide area network. How can you work with your provincial offices if that doesn't work? What hope do you have to actually be able to communicate with them? Implement an IT help desk. The only thing you've achieved is you've completed the minimum spec required, and then nothing else has been done. Monitor use of system by employees, monitor use satisfactory with IT support, not achieved. Similarly with, and so I can go through them. Now, this is important, Chairperson. Develop and implement a backup solution. This should be one of your risks if you have a disaster. Do you have a backup? You've not achieved. You've developed the solution, but you haven't implemented it. You don't monitor backups. Doesn't happen. And in fact, the next one on the next page, 35, is your disaster recovery plans. Not achieved. If your building had to burn down today, you would have no way of recovering any of the information. Now, Chair, we spoke at length, and you mentioned what was told to the chairs by the Auditor General about the internal audit committees and so on. On page 41, right at the bottom, the last paragraph of the Audit and Risk Management Subcommittee, the Audit and Risk Management Committee confirms that it has complied with its responsibilities. I want to put it to that audit committee that they don't know what their responsibilities are. Not based on this report, and please forgive me, I'm not attacking any individual.
How can they make a statement like this based on a report such as is before us? And sit here, if they are here, or wherever they are, and say they have done their duties, they've done their job. And to bear that out, Chairperson, if you go to the PFMA checklist, and this is the first entity that I've seen that have done that, and they've, which is quite informative, they've ticked all the right boxes, except if you go to page 48, any losses recovered or written off, not applicable. How the hell can it be not applicable? If you're not going to recover it, you're going to have to write it off. Page 48, Chairperson. Now, what does that tell us? That you're either not making an attempt to recover it, but neither are you interested in writing it off. And I believe this is wrong, this tick box. But that is what is before us. That's what's in the public domain. And in that regard, Chairperson, I'm going to come back to the Board of Directors. I did it to the SABC a few weeks ago. Doesn't the board, this, before it comes, before it's tabled, I would imagine that the Board of Directors, the board looks and they get this before it gets all signed off. Now, my question to them again is, don't they ask the sort of questions that we ask? Don't they go through it before this goes out to the public? And if the response is yes, then, you know, then the board should be replaced again. Because they're not doing their work. And I was hoping to hear a whole lot of yes from my colleagues, but it's, they seem to...
Yeah, of things that are no. That's what Honourable saying.
Chair, I think I apologize to interject the Honourable Member. However, I think it's a little bit out of tune in terms of the timing. This is a new board. They only had their meeting last week as the chairperson presented. But I know that he's asking the board that doesn't exist in terms of...
It's a point of clarity, not a point of order.
It's an order because he's saying something that...
Okay.
I'm saying it nicely, though. Thank you, Chair.
Honourable saying, how long they are in the office? 3 months? Okay. I understand KZN linked to Honorable Disoma, But the Honorable saying the fact is that they are failing you. But you can proceed.
Chair, I did sort of qualify my opening remarks. I indicated that I'm cognizant of it, and it's not necessarily the people responsible here. Can I just very quickly go to some of the financial statements, page 55? And it's something my colleagues mentioned. Now, we've had a 25% increase in your transfers, page 55. That's increased from 66 million to 83 million. It's a 25% increase. However, if you look at your staff cost, and this is comparatively high, it's 41% of your budget. That is relatively high. But what is even higher is the fact that from the previous year, your staff costs have increased by 42%. Now, again, compared to the number of targets that's been achieved, I don't know how you can justify the increase in staff costs. It may be that you've employed more people, but then what did those people do, considering that you haven't achieved your targets? And I'm almost at the end, but there are one or two things, Chair. I've touched on the performance bonus. You've only achieved 9% of your targets, and yet you're giving performance bonuses. And some of these things may relate to what happened in the past, like, for example, the legal fees, which have gone up dramatically from 83,000 to 1.1 million. If you could give us an indication of what that is, fines and penalties. And then again, my colleague touched on the overseas travel, that costs have gone up. I would have expected that to, in fact, have been reduced quite drastically. Because you, well, perhaps not you again, forgive me, Chair, but they should have concentrated on closing those holes and doing those sorts of things rather than going overseas, I would imagine. There's also the thing, and maybe this relates to the offices, it was the vacant offices, but there's an operating lease charges of buildings that was almost doubled from the previous year. Similarly, vehicles have gone up dramatically. It may just be in thousands, but from 7,000 to 16,000. Just perhaps a short explanation for that. And then the CEO, he was given a page 72, senior
management, executive management, he was given a 770,000 rand settlement upon resignation. Now, given presumably he's one of those that was in charge when all this rot took place. Now, given that, why on earth was he given a settlement upon his resignation? I may be wrong. I don't have the specifics, but if he was at the head of all this when these things were happening, then in fact he should have been fired and not been given a set. Chair, with that, I rest my case. Thank you.
Thank you, Jefferson. Actually, you actually did me a favor because some of the previous members have actually covered quite a lot of ground. I also marked the issue of the CEO who left, the settlement and resignation. And I would like to link that to the slide that we've had with the senior executives who, against whom disciplinary action was instituted and who subsequently resigned. Can I just make it 100% sure? Will you charge them criminally for irregular expenditure? Will they be hunted down? Because we must now bring to an end this looting of public funds. And we want to have categorically an undertaking from this board that they mean business and they will stop this. That's the first thing. Chairperson, the second matter was my concern with regards to risk management.
The one who's speaking is Honorable Killen. The previous one was Honorable Stein. She's from the Congress of the People. Honorable Stein is from Democratic Alliance. Honorable Shin, she's from Democratic Alliance. The rest are from ANC. Probably they are also, you'll catch up with their names as time goes on. Honorable Killen, you may proceed.
Thank you, Jefferson. Jefferson, I would like to go to page 73, where we have an analysis of the fruitless and wasteful expenditure. And I want to make sure that it was a... It is said there, SARS incident penalties, etc. When discovery was made at the time, the CFO was already on suspension and therefore could not be disciplined. Now, subsequently, that person resigned, if I'm not mistaken, and I want to know, will those penalties be recovered from him, even if it takes sort of legal action to do that? Then the Protea of Stellenbosch Hotel, action will be taken against offenders, and that was 33,000 rand. The previous one was 205,000 rand. What has subsequently been done? Have they? Because if we must understand that in terms of the PFMA, the accounting body must demonstrate that they have actually taken steps to either recover the money or to charge the people, then it's a matter for the police. But the point is this, steps must be taken. The rental paid for offices not in use, that is equally very disconcerting. Discussions are being held with lessors regarding cancellation. We're happy to know that. We want to know who entered in those lease agreements. And were that those sort of agreements, is that part of your risk management strategy? Clearly it was not part of the past. But we, going forward, we need to have confirmation that there will be a central location to prevent a recurrence of such irregularities. Then the former CEO, we've already dealt with that. Then the last one.
What are you doing?
No. Chairperson, I just wanted to know that there's an amount of 66,000 rand, which is listed next to cap leave, was taken over by the agency from a former employer. There's a 66. It is also page 73. Can we just please have clarity about that? I know it was last year, but maybe you can just give us clarity about that. All of and wasteful expenditure is totaled as 1 million. Now, that is a significant amount, Chair. We cannot just brush over these matters. Then irregular expenditure, there's reconciliation that is there, but what steps are in place to prevent, again, a recurrence of this? And the disciplinary steps, last one on the page, it is annually every one of the public entities we have a recurrence of this, that quotations are not sourced competitive from competitive companies. So verbal warnings have been issued to the relevant personnel. But when will the board actually start implementing the PFMA and in fact deduct from those salaries of the people who are involved an amount payable over a period, but until people feel it in their pockets, they will not listen and they will not abide, because every year they just come scot-free. Chairperson, that brings me to the CEO report. Fortunately, I was covered last on that one, but there were matters listed. Just want to get to open this page. Page 41, Board of Directors Corporate Governance Report. I would like to suggest at the top of the Code of Conduct, where it says that they are reviewing regularly the highest standards of ethical behavior amongst its members, management, and employees, I want to suggest that what we are seeing in the rest of the report certainly does not bear testimony to this statement at the top. And I think that is a misrepresentation of the actual report. But I want to commend them for some honesty on this report as well. First of all, I want to commend them for the fact that their Audit and Risk Management Subcommittee is one of the few entities where I note that it is not a board member that is chairing that Audit and Risk Subcommittee. And that is really commendable, because you need to have the independence from that body and the board. You cannot have a board member to chair your Audit and Risk Committees, because that would be a contravention of Treasury Regulation 2713, I think I will correct myself, but that is a contravention, and we must get that right. I will check my book. I see the chairperson is laughing, but I will check that out, and I will just say, but I want to commend the board for it. I am also concerned about the statement that the Audit and Risk Committee complied with their responsibilities. Again, that's a misrepresentation. And we cannot have that contained in an annual report, Chairperson. This is incorrect. Risk management, under the heading risk management, the next page, operational risk management committee was not functional. So it's a bit of a contradiction that on the one hand they're saying they have exercised all their responsibilities as a committee, subcommittee, but now it is under the risk management heading they admit that it was not in place. I want to also commend them for the top of page 42, where they have indicated that the internal controls of the agency were ineffective in all aspects during the financial year, because that is an honest statement. At least that links up with the Auditor General's findings. But I have a concern, and that is that the agency has complied with the requirements of the PFMA, that is the paragraph that is stated just above the evaluation of financial statements. It says there, the agency has complied with the requirements of the PFMA, whereby quarterly reports were presented to the shareholders as required by legislation. Because that is a worry to me if the shareholder and the Department of Communication did not act and intervene further. What we see is really a dysfunctional body which consumes salary money. As the Honourable Stein has and Schneeman have indicated, we have handsome executive salaries paid. In fact, some of the top officials are being paid equal to what the President of the country is earning, well, very close to that. and yet this body is, when it comes to projects, it runs out of finances, and it cannot be, a body such as this cannot exist to pay salaries to a few individuals. Chairperson, now, I just want to turn to page 53, which is the report of the Auditor General. Actually, this page, these two pages, together with the USAF pages, as concluded by the Auditor General, this speaks to complete mismanagement of funds, of ineffectiveness, more than anything else. And we want to know, what are they doing to stop the malpractices as far as procurement is concerned? How will they check and recheck and build in systems to prevent that? If you look at procurement, contracts and quotations were awarded water to suppliers whose tax matters had not been declared by the South African Revenue Services to be in order. There's a system. There's a very, very simple computer system that you can check with SARS. So how can we do? How can the state conduct business with people and individuals who are non-compliant as far as this is concerned? Don't we understand that we're working with public money and we're spending public money, but we're not making sure that Treasury gets what is due to them? You cannot have a situation like that. Achievement of planned targets, 9%. In fact, if we look at the reduction of salaries, Chairperson, I think we should start aligning the achievement on objectives. We should align that to percentages of salaries to be paid out before we get to performance bonuses. Because people are being paid packages to perform, but then they don't perform. They underperform, as is clearly here, only 9%. So perhaps we should start asking them to refund to the state the 81%. Wonderful, is it? 91% that they must actually pay back. Because if they don't perform, what is the reason for this institution's existence? We are here to make sure that access to ICT is really driven by this agency. And look at this. We asked last year, Jay, if you will recall, should we not just close this down? And I would like to suggest that we reconsider that. Unless the board can today give us an undertaking that in all material respects they will take this as a textbook of what is wrong and turn this institution around within the prescribed period. If you cannot give us that undertaking, we will have to reconsider our position. Thank you, Chair.
Roche.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you for your presentation. I'd like to go to the PowerPoint presentation, page 5. Presenter said, the role of the USASA towards the public school needs to be discussed. And they looked at the issue of broadband. I just want to know, USASA plus DOT, have you clarified that role, please? Is the public clear regarding that role? Have you discussed that? Because remember, we discussed that issue, that broadband information, we don't know as to who must do that, is it Centric's responsibility, is it USASA's responsibility, whose responsibility is that, and we have to clear that out, and is the public aware of that role as well? And then page 6, I'm not clear, right at the bottom, you are saying that not achieved the last column there. The recent 3G coverage has disqualified. I'm under service. I just don't understand that block there. Can you just explain that block to me there? And then on page 8, at the bottom there, right at the bottom, second column, for April 2011-12, publish discussion document and invite public input. Not
not achieved, because agreed indicators is incorporated in the census, and therefore not no need for publication. Just clarity there. Why? Because the target is undeveloped, developed of measurable ICT accessible and impact indicators. Why do you bring the census into this? Maybe I'm not clear, but if you can give some clarity here. I need some clarity. If you can answer from census or not, I don't understand that. Just give me some clarity around that. On page 8, on 9, and if I do read correctly, your statistics, you gave an amount there and a rollover, the total rollover request of 266,789, okay, 266 million, but in 2000, okay, you spoke about, and 220 million for the set-up boxes, and if I look at my deductions, there's about 46 million that is outstanding. If you go back to page 9, and there's a lot of things that have not been achieved because of the forensic investigation that is happening. So, this is now the new year, 2012, 2013. Are you saying many things will not be achieved because the forensic investigation is still happening? I'd like to know time frames. What, how long is your forensic investigation going to be taking? Will take, and how long must we wait? Obviously, because there's work that needs to be done, so that is the work on hold because of the forensic investigation. I just need some clarity around this. That means that the public out there needs to wait for a service to be delivered by USASA because there's a forensic investigation that is happening. In your annual report, page 83. Under provisions for impairment of provisions for impairment of financial instruments, I'm not clear on that. Please, can you explain that statement? Please, in simple English. English might be my first language, but please, simple language there for me to understand what is written there. Then, as my colleagues did mention, what is on page 90, we talk about fruitless and wasteful expenditure. There are three things mentioned there. It was discovered from 2009-2010, discovered from during the year 2011-12. The money that was given to Telkom and Centec, but there was no connectivity. So I just want to know, Centec and Telkom, have they paid that money back? Because obviously they were saying that there's no connectivity, but you paid that. I would think that would be the honorable thing to do if there's no connectivity provided. I'd like to know if they haven't paid that money back, then why not? We are going into the new year, 2012-13. Are you still paying that amount? Because it seems like it was for 2 years, if not more, there was no connectivity, but you paid that amount of money. My colleague said we visited various offices, but there's no connectivity happening, and so it seems that there was a connectivity fee paid, but no connectivity paid. So are they going to pay that money back? Are we going to do the same for the following year? There's no connectivity. Why? I just want to know if that money has been paid back from Telkom and Centec to USASA. Thank you, Chief.
Kekani?
Yes, Chair. A lot of things have been said already by.
Sorry, Kotane, just hold. Can you switch off the mic, the next mic? You can proceed.
Who's Kotane now, Chair?
You can proceed. One mic was on, that's why you had your first voice, which was ugly.
Chair, I'm saying a lot of things I've said, but the one that I want to repeat for emphasis are two: the Tucson Center and the U.S. The USASA offices that we went to during our oversight. The Tucson Center or Tele Center, when we went out on oversight, looked like they are very important to the society, that actually giving the society hope that facilities are coming to very remote areas of our rural areas where there's literally nothing. Some people will see computers, internet, all these things, all these services in the computer era for the first time, and gain access there in the rural areas from Tele Center or Tucson Center. Now, the argument is that if the Tucson Centers are not functioning, and USASA is proposing that they want to roll out Cascade 65 more nationally, indeed it makes sense that let them first focus on those that they've already rolled out to operate to function properly. But you know, part of the problem why they are not functioning, when you go there you can see sad faces, people whose expectations were raised, and this thing that they had so much trust in and were expecting a service out of is not functioning. And indeed, in a lot of cases, it is leadership, because some cases the director of the Tucson Center would be coming while we are there. We're waiting for him to come and give us a report. He's still 90 kilos away. He's in his car. This is in the morning traveling. You can see he's avoiding us. Now, if problem is leadership and not the Tucson Center itself, the community still needs it. I'm not for the idea that USASA should close down. I'm for the idea that we fix which is wrong, that is leadership. At the top level in USASA, even at Tucson Center themselves, and get the Tucson Center to function properly. I would say even the cascading of 65 must continue, because one of the suggestions was that local government is not supporting them as they're supposed to. Maybe we should, USASA must speak to put this on the agenda of SALGA, where all the mayors meet, and let them discuss it and join the battle to get the Tucson Center to function. Because if the need is there and it is a good need with good intention and it is people who are letting us down, let's fight to fix this thing of people rather than close down USASA and all the two. You see, the communities can't suffer because leadership is not doing their work. We'll rather change leadership and battle to get the right leadership rather than close down Tucson Center, which there's a high need of in the rural communities. The same applies to USASA. We went to the, and I would say we should speak to SALGA, put it in the agenda, and USASA must go and address the mayors where they meet. SALGA is South African Local Government Association. They meet regularly, once or twice a year, and they address all the matters that involve. Because part of the support that we're asking is their emergency policy on services, so that the Tucson centers can be considered in the emergency policy, because they really help poor people there in terms of services. And also the structure where all premiers meet with national government, because province is also not supporting. And they were saying in some instances they just need the right center. The center is small, and they know there are vacant places owned by public works in province. And public, I mean, if you just see big areas vacant and going
their own. I've got nothing to do with them, local government, province, other spheres. It is for us to fight to link this thing up. But I really feel they be given a chance, because maybe 5 years, 6 years, 7 years, 8 years, the situation would be different, rather than close them down, because the community needs them and the community will suffer. I think our duty is to fight to make sure that they operate correctly. We went to USASA head office, and there was a young girl there who gave us a report and said, I wake up in the morning and I'm not sure when I go to work, I still have a future in this country, whether I'm going to be told my job has come to an end because USASA is closing down, or I'm just declared redundant. I want to work, I love my job, I'm proud of it, and I think I have a future in this career. You know, here we're dealing with people. We're dealing with people who some are doing wrong things, but some have so much hopes in the new government that there's a future. Let's not let them live like during apartheid, when you are third class and you're not feeling you are a fully fledged citizen of this country. You feel you are half citizen of this country because you are third class, treated like third class in trains everywhere. You're just third class. So I'm just saying, this gives our people hope, young people and old people. There was a lady there, the head office, actually, who's oldish. And you can feel she doesn't have high blood, she's going to develop it because of the stress that the job is generating. So the big battle is to get this thing operating for the sake of our people, whose hope is, it might be a small thing, but for them it's a big thing, because this gives them hope for the future. And I think the big battle for us is to get this thing operating properly, rather than closing them down. So I would suppose that we cascade the 65, because maybe when they are big and national, the voice will be big and people will listen. But I just think we should think of the people on the ground who are supposed to be served by these facilities, rather than those that are up there and maybe doing wrong things. People by nature will always do, some of them will always do wrong things, and it is for us to correct those wrong things. So, Chair, I'm actually saying, I'm talking too much, maybe I'm getting you confused, you don't know what I'm ultimately saying. I'm actually saying...
No, you're not saying anything. But this is in relation to the annual report, if I can...
Yeah, this is what has been raised about the annual report, about the Tucson Centers, Greg, everybody actually who spoke before me, and there was a suggestion that maybe USASA should close down. I'm saying it shouldn't, because it is needed. The Tucson Center also, I'm saying, the additional 65 that Comrade Greg raised, that must be cascaded. I say go ahead and cascade them, and let's try and correct things through local government. So I'm disappointed if you're saying I'm not saying anything, because it means you're not listening to me. You're so much frustrated that you can't hear what you are saying now. So I'm saying I strongly support, and you start having at head office, that there also we should speed up the process of getting 18 posts filled in so that they can be stabilized. The chairperson said they are trying to stabilize them. I'm saying the staff, ordinary members, are so frustrated because they don't know where they stand, where they still have an institution to work for in another day, or their jobs also. So I'm saying the sooner we stabilize them, the better. I mean, I'm saying take hard action. If people who have acted wrongly can be done with in a disciplinary way, do that speedily. Because unless we act, we'll never govern properly. Thanks, Chair. Are you hearing me now? I'm still saying nothing.
You said what you were saying in 2 minutes, then you repeated it from time to time.
Because you didn't hear what I was saying. So I must repeat.
Honorable Mrutu.
same thing that Honorable Kekane did. I would very much like you to really understand my approach. Firstly, I should apologize for coming late, Chairperson. I didn't mention it to you, but I've learned a lesson, you know, about coming late, because I had premonitions about the whole report and some of the things I'd like to say. Almost all of them are said by Honorable State. Now, I've learned my lesson. I just want to say to you, Chairperson, you know, I'm so happy that the other day you went to this Chairperson's meeting whereby you agreed that maybe we should have a meeting with the internal auditors and the auditing committees of these entities. Because I really think from what was said with us by the Auditor General, looking at the annual report, when you say you have an unqualified with other findings, it sounds so mild to us. When you go into the report, these are very serious things. I think we should have we should meet all these auditors. One of the things I wanted to ask Chairperson, it's a simple thing, about the irregular, fruitless and wasteful expenditure, whereby it was mentioning the 1 million that was incurred as a result to SARS penalties. I think this relates to number 20 of the report of the Auditor General, where contracts, I think Honorable Killian did mention this, contracts and quotations were awarded to suppliers whose tax matters had not been declared by the South African Revenue Services to be in order as required by Treasury regulations, blah, 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 and the preferential settlement. That's number 20. Now, I want to know, because this board is a new board, it also says at the end of this Auditor General's report that on number 28, investigations into alleged financial misconduct pertaining to various officials of the entity was carried out during the year under review, and at the date of this report was the investigations were still in progress. And I suppose this is the date that we have here. I just wanted to know, in conjunction also with the SARS irregularity, what is being done by this present board. All the other things that I wanted to ask you about have been said by Honorable. I was very worried about the offices that were not occupied and rent has been continuously paid. But Honorable Schneeman spoke about this. On the annual the report of the Auditor General, the other thing that I wanted to know whether the annual report was annual performance report. Was it presented in accordance with the National Treasury annual reporting principles according to the board? Maybe they should explain to me. Because it leads me to page the CEO's report here, the CEO's office. That's why I say Honorable King has dealt with it, where you have so many things not achieved. And I don't know whether this has been done, you know, according with the principles of the annual reporting or annual performance report. Maybe they can explain to us so that we understand better. If you read the Auditor General's report here, issues that were mentioned by the Auditor General, for instance, the compliance with laws and regulations, on number 18, it's explained explicitly that the procedures to obtain evidence that the entities are complied with applicable laws and regulations regarding financial matters. Here, the findings on material non-compliance with specific matters in the key applicable laws and regulations as set on the general notice issued in terms of. We want to know also because the report that we're given by the Auditor General is that there were all these entities that we identified the other day, including USASA, they were not complying with the laws. Maybe they can explain to us. Thank you. Otherwise, everything has been said that I was concerned about. And lastly, I concur with the Honorable Gagan in what he has been saying. Whether you didn't understand it, we need USASA. We need to deal with the people who are, you know, who are not compliant to our laws, who think they are a law to themselves, the individuals, but the structure we need, because all these entities were put in place by this democratic government. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Lisa?
No, thank you, Chair. I'm sorry to do this. It tends to be a habit, as I can observe from the last few days from my side. I apologize for that. But just to the other one, Chair, in terms of slide 15, in terms of under financials, the lease issue, which is linked to what in terms of the asset management and all that, I'm sure there are financial implications. Who's going to incur those financial implications in terms of cancelling those leases? Because, let me just say that, and I'm sure as a learned friend, the gentleman knows that. The other one issue, which I raised it in one of the presentations yesterday, Chair, and nobody, even I asked DOC, I'm repeating it now, but specifically for this one, in relation to slide 15, the issue of rollovers. I thought there are no rollovers in terms of treasury, but you declare that it goes back to fiscal. But also my worry, if you've got so huge amounts of rollovers, which then you tend also, I'm sure you're going to speak to this one, but I'm repeating deliberately, and then based on that, pay bonuses. But where I am in terms of the incoming year plans and your five-year plans, in terms of the budget that you get from the treasury would be cut off if you don't spend. But to spend it in the right way, following all the processes, but I'm just raising that the implications thereof, probably things have changed, but I don't think they've changed so much. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, members. Those were the questions. Look, members, it depends how you want to play it. We can try, but I don't think we'll succeed. The fact of the matter is that you've got an institution which is in trouble. Administratively, it's just in trouble. There's nothing working, seeming, in that institution. A new board has been appointed, which is before us. Now, members have raised questions ranging from the bonuses and also the location of offices, which seems to be outside. They are not reachable. Sorry to say, that's the view of the members after conducting the oversight. And all what they are asking is that the board must consider relocation to an accessible area. Probably we are not sure about the cost even there. Probably that's also going to deal with the issue of cost even for the office themselves when you move to other offices and so on. There are issues of bonuses. I think the issue members which are raising is that nobody is sure what was the process which culminated for people to receive bonuses whereas the institution is not performing. That's the issue. You've got an institution which does not meet any of their objectives, but bonuses are being paid. What is the process which has been gone through which culminated for people to get bonuses? What were the considerations for the payment of those bonuses, because bonuses and performance awards are linked to performance. Now, if that is not dealt with, Chair, it will be a dependent syndrome in those employees that they always get bonuses, even if they cannot show
on performance. What exactly is happening? Because there's a word bonuses and performance, then people must get bonus. Probably in this financial year they're expecting bonus. Because anyway they get it anyway, even if they don't perform. So it's just a routine that there's a bonus. But what have you performed is not clear. But I think, members, why I'm raising that, I think it's critical to say we need to decide how to move forward. Because we have raised a lot of questions, and I don't see those questions being answered by this board. There are other questions which they can respond, but the critical question, like the issue of bonus, we want a full investigation and get a report at the committee. What has unfolded until people get bonuses? We want a full report so that the board will come back to the committee and tell us what has unfolded until people get bonuses. What were the considerations exactly? So that we understand, we're comfortable that the budget which we approve as a committee is used correctly. I don't see them. They can try to respond, but I don't think they'll be able to help to get that until we've got a clear report around that particular matter and so on, in terms of the issue of bonuses. Because people must understand that they perform to get bonuses and so on. I think, so the issue, members, which I'm raising is that probably some of the issues we have raised, they should be able to note them. Other issues are for the committee to recommend when we finalize our report moving forward, which has been raised by the members. Which as a committee, we still have to debate that and agree what become our recommendation of the report and so on, which we are going to finally go to Parliament for adoption and the other things and so on. But I will say, members, probably what we need to do, we don't even have to go to the first quarter report with you, sir. It won't help. Probably what we need to do is to say to the board, how long do they need to understand these issues and come back to this committee to table a new revised strategic plan, starting with the strategic plan, because the current strategic plan, I don't think that there is any hope that it will ever be achieved. So what we'll do when they come with the other quarters, we are going to continue blaming them. So I think what is important, unless there are other questions, members feel strong that must be responded. But the issue is, members have raised questions from the issue of the wasteful, irregular expenditure and so on, processes which need to be taken, discipline and other things. All what we'll need is the full comprehensive report. How will this board respond to those things? And how are they thinking that they are going to make sure that they deal with those matters? I think that's what's going to help us. Otherwise, members, I can assure you, they can attempt to respond on these matters. They won't be able to. But the other issue which members are raising is the role of DOC that continue to come up, which is not clear how DOC help the entities. The issue of a caretaker is when you take people into that institution to assist in a time. But DOC has got the fundamental responsibility to make sure that entities are operating. Not the intervention is one thing, gentlemen, that you are there as a caretaker. But you've got a responsibility by DOC to ensure that entities, they continue to exist. In fact, all these things DOC should have picked it up long time ago. Not even the interest. So, because there's a shareholder compact which must be concluded between DOC and the entities, which determine the performance, what are the areas, and so on. By the time it comes to us, DOC should have done almost a lot of things before it comes to us. So my proposal, members, will be that the board, what they must indicate to us, how much time do they need, probably we should must also discuss it as members, whether it's reasonable and so on, to interact with all these issues. But amongst other things, they must revise their strategic plan. Because I don't think that the current strategic plan will ever make sense. It will continuously have a problem and so on. So that they will come back to us and give us a revised strategic plan, which will be able to measure them with moving forward, and come back and follow up in terms of the other quotas and so on. But that's my view, members, or my proposal. Because any attempt to respond, I can assure you, you'll have more questions after more. But the issue of bonuses needs a full-blast investigation. Each and every person who gets a bonus for the previous two financial years
2010, 2011, 2012, and so on, they must be able to account for each bonus. What exactly was the bonus all about? Because the institution has never performed the past two financial years. That has to be done separately, and the report is presented so that people will understand that it's not free for all. There are certain things which need to be done before things happen. Probably they comply with everything. Honorable Soma, your hand is up. Who else?
Thank you, Honorable Chair. One will support the proposed way forward presented by you, Chair. But in terms of the time frame, I don't think it's going to be fair to ask the board, because there are time frames in terms of reporting quarterly reports and so forth and so forth. I would say that before the second quarter report gets submitted to us, then they need to work backwards and give us that report, because they still have to look at the policies, existing policies, what informs this and all those things, but which means then they have to work 24/7. But I'm saying that before the second quarter report comes, it should then get reflect all the issues that you've raised, also review the threat plan for the current financial year. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. I was going to suggest that the board report to us in a month with this revised plan. I think that they need to focus totally on it, and we need to actually have it in place by before we rise at the end of the year.
Okay. Chairperson of the Board.
Thank you, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members. I was just writing the suggestion of dates on when we should come back, and I was trying to calculate at the back of my mind in terms of the things that we covered. The beauty of what has been said here, the Honourable Committee has given us specifics in terms of what we need to be reporting to. And then these other things would form part and parcel of it. That for me is clear direction in terms of what is expected. So it's for us to try and fit that into a program. If I'm not mistaken, Chair, I will ask that I should be reminded by the office. I saw a document that indicates that the committee agents when December. I'm trying to work time. That's the 1 month that has been spoken about. Yeah, I haven't consulted my colleagues, but they are here. Fortunately, they are hearing. And let us say for now, Chair, let us take what is being said to us. We will caucus and we'll speak about it, and we'll come back in writing. Let us attempt and see how much we can do in that period. Some of these things that have been said here do not need rocket science to achieve. I'm sure we can be able to achieve them. So I'm going to move out of this episode, Honorable Chair, with the idea that this we can do. Unless I can be shut down.
You see, Chair, what the committee needs is that when you come before us, we don't expect you to have finalized policies and so on. We want to get your master plan. You see, the issue is, the broader question is, how are you going to turn around this mess? That's the question you must respond to. So when you come before us, that's why I'm saying probably that will change even the strategic plan. Because the question is, how are you going to turn around this mess? It doesn't matter who calls it, but it is just a mess which needs to be cleaned up. Someone was saying it's the ICU situation and so on. So the issue is, how do you get a correct combination to inject to this patient so that they get out of the ICU? That's the issue. So probably when you come back to clarify what processes will engage, and we don't expect you to say exactly, I've done this, and not. We want the process which will be able then to monitor as a committee until the end of the financial year, which take everything back to the normal route and so on. Otherwise, thanks very much, members. CET has just arrived in 5 minutes ago. Thanks very much, the board of the USASA, the chair, the gentleman. But gentlemen,
also your time must come to an end in New South. Probably next time when they come here, they must come with their own personnel. You must just get out of USASA and do your oversight, not to be part and parcel of the fence. Thanks very much. We'll proceed in 10 minutes. Sir.
Lisa first. Ah, oh, thank you.
Mother Killian Stokar.
Against the
government guarantee target, profit target of 225. Yes. Therefore, to just generalize and say you're not meeting government guarantee is not correct. You've got to be specific about what you mean.
Members, we are starting. I can see there's a problem with technology. Don't worry. The chairperson, don't worry with the technology. As long as we have not changed your presentation to be something else, they'll fix the technology once we are running. But I want the chair to set it down. That's why I'm not starting. I'll only start when the chair is settled. So that we're able to start. Welcome, Nemisa. Led by the chairperson and the acting CEO, Dr. Veso, Dr. Veso, and the other board members who are here, and the other executives who are here with us. We are starting. If someone can just close the door, that will be okay. So that we are starting. But I'll hand over to you, Chair of the Board, to take us through. But you don't have to bother much about presenting. After you're taking us through, we go straight to questions. Then you will respond on questions. This member has read your report, so they are ready to ask questions. Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Good morning to all the Honorable Members. And thank you for giving us this opportunity to present and to let you ask us questions about on our annual report. Year ending 2011-2012. Year ending 2012, and we'll also give you a brief on the performance for the third quarter ending 2012. Present with me, I'll start from the left hand side. I'm with Ms. Moira Malakalaka, who is the CFO of NEMISA. The acting CEO, Mr. Dr. Harold Professor. On my right, I have the COO, Mr. Takalani Ramajusu, and the non-executive members that are here with us is Mr. Haiti Wiedenepa, who is also the chair of the BAS committee, and Mr. Tami Gablaki, who is the chair of the HR committee. We have at the back, again, the company secretary, Mr. Hulisani Morovi. And apologies, we have apologies from Prof. Graham Mikas, who didn't join us due to prior commitment. I should also just mention that, unfortunately, this week we had a resignation from one of the other board members. So our board complement history is really compromised again. We're supposed to have a board complement of 7 non-executives, and now we have 4. But I can tell you that the 4 is really working hard. Thank you. The other thing about the resignation, we have communicated with the DOC and the minister, and they have given us the commitment that we will have an appointment. We will have the vacant post filled. And on top of that, we only have one board member who who has been there for over 4 years. So he's the only member that has memory or institutional memory. So the rest of us are still new, and obviously it affects on continuity. But we are working on that. We are happy to announce that obviously I'm sure you all know the Auditor General has given us an unqualified report, as will be presented by the CFO. Just in summary as well, from the last meeting that we had, We had mentioned, we had agreed with the committee that we will look into having a strategy, in a turnaround strategy at NEMISA, just a turnaround strategy. I mean, the NEMISA, the, I'll call it the old NEMISA into new NEMISA. And I just want to allay to the members that we have been, the board and the team have been working on a strategy, on a plan, on a business plan that we will be presenting to the DOC at the end of this month. And we will have, we'll also request that chairperson, if you can, probably just invite us at some point to come and present the business plan to you. And we're hoping that by the next financial year, we will have a new NEMISA. Thank you. I'll hand over to my team to present.
Thank you, Chairperson. We are the only institution, if I check, yeah, one of the few where the fruitless and wasteful and irregular does not seem to reflect that much. You can proceed. But like I've indicated, that you are not taking your full presentation. You can just take out your pen and your book and take this document out, your annual report, and then start to note the pages which members will be quoting and so on. Members, this is NEMISA before you. They are ready for questions. Honorable Shin, Honorable Killen, Honorable Isoma, Honorable Schneeman, Honorable Sain, Honorable Shin.
Thank you, Chair. I was a bit confused about the staffing complement at the NEMISA, and I was wondering if I could have some sort of clarity on overall what your vacancy rate is, because it seems a bit erratic. I was concerned on page 25, this is where we're talking about targets. It happened a couple of times. There was no shareholder compact signed. That was for the business and development fundraising target. Now that was, you actually got to raise money to exist, and there was no compact with the shareholder. And I wondered why. And an awful, because much of your failure to achieve targets is because no funds were granted, and so you have all these targets. You have no shareholder compact on the one main fundraising thing, and so if they're not going to give you money, they need to allow you to raise money, and why wasn't that done? Then I was looking at your, well, I wanted to know about your vacancy rate, because it seems to be quite, trying to decipher those pie charts, because it seems that your staff costs have gone up quite considerably for an entity that has, very little money available to it. Because it's gone up from 2011 from 15.8 million to 20.4 million. And so again, you get the impression that it seems to exist to pay salaries. And there was a reference to that on page, sorry, I'll just go back. No, I've dealt with that. And there was student accommodation, which I now can't find. Student accommodation costs, have also doubled, virtually doubled, from 1.5 million in 2011 to 3 million now, which is quite considerable, and yet the food costs have been cut by a third. So you're supplying all these rooms and you're not feeding these people, so wondering what is going on. And the lecturer facilitation fees have sort of halved. So you've got more students, but you're not paying your lecturers and you're not feeding your students. So one wonders what is going on here. And one assumes that these accommodation costs are particularly high because they're, I presume, you're taking in more rural students. And so one wondering if you're just financing the migration from the rural areas to town, and how much teaching is actually happening. Well, it is a fair amount of teaching, that's unfair of me. But I wanted, there was no real clarity on how effective your teaching is. There was some, can't find it now. You seem to produce material that's not aired. There were two programs that you had, I think, done for SABC according to some sort of, here we go, sorry, industry endorsed programs, three programs, page 26. Your target was to, you made three, but yet what's happened to those three? Have they been aired? What's been the feedback? What I'm wanting to know is how effective are you in A, producing material that's used and is saleable, and how many, and is there some way you have of monitoring how many of your students, your graduates, are actually employed and still in the industry? Do you have any way of tracking that? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Honourable Clint.
Jefferson, I just want to have a few questions on first of all, page 26. Yes, let me just, by way of introductory just remarks, say that according to the report of all the entities and the report from the Auditor General, from what we could understand, it was the very first year that there was a regression and a new problem. The new problem in NAMESA was supply chain management, if I'm not incorrect. Greg, where are your blocks, please? And the other one is a repeat problem. Now, whereas we appreciate the fact that you have an unqualified audit, we just want to say a clean audit is not yet achieved. A clean audit is only when you have really zero findings of the Auditor General. So, but I must say, NAMESA is one of the problems. It's not one of the problem children. The NAMESA we had on strategic planning, we had a repeat. And I think that relates to your objectives, clearly defined objectives. I think that is essentially what the problem is. Now, we were discussing it yesterday, and I would like to put it to the NAMESA board today again. It is such an important body, but that you should rather focus on fewer targets, make sure that you get those right before you embark on a wide range of strategic objectives that you cannot achieve due to budget not being available, whatever. In the process, you are actually setting yourself up for failure, because in the end, it has a negative impact on staff morale, on management morale, on everybody. So rather do the critical things right and make sure that you don't lapse on your financial management. Because as a body operating on public funding, that is the number one. You must be able to account on every cent that is spent. It's not like you are operating in a business environment. This is public funds. And I think that's, I just wanted to say that. Now, I need to just understand better. On your page 26, you have indicated that you wanted to establish a secure NAMESA campus. What is the current situation? Are you renting property? because What is important here is just to understand what are you starting from. You're paying quite a lot on property rates, etc., etc. So what is the current situation, and what are the
the crippling factors as far as your current campus is concerned? Second one would have related to your ability to raise additional funds for that. What were the impairments? What made it impossible to achieve that? Then I want to turn to page... Yes, and I find it quite interesting. I have not seen it, and it's maybe just because you are reporting very extensively and very elaborately. It's the first time that I've seen that every non-executive director's movements, attendance of parliament, opening is sort of adequately covered. There was one instance, there were different preparation of an annual general meeting with the deputy minister, etc., etc. This is page 10, Chairperson. Just clarity on the parliamentary study group held on 11 October last year. Can we just understand what was the study group? Because I'm not aware of any study group. Was this maybe an ANC study group that was attended? And then secondly, if that is so, does it mean that the board, non-executive board members will be available to also attend the study group of other political parties? Okay. Then I want to turn to page... the audited general report. Oh, yes. Can I just state... the previous page, page 37, before we get to the AG report. The chairperson of your Board Audit and Risk Management Committee, am I correct that this is a board member, a non-executive board member? And then I just wanted to say that I do believe it's necessary for Namisa to note, and it is Treasury Regulation 2713, chairperson, which is making it very clear that there must be distance between the accounting authority and the audit and risk function. 2713 of the Treasury Regulations stipulates that the chairperson of the audit committee must be independent, be knowledgeable of the status of the position, have the requisite business, financial and leadership skills, and may not be the chairperson of the accounting authority or a person who fulfills an executive function in the public entity. That means that you should have a totally independent person who is chairing that function. So may I just say that this is how it is understood. If there are any sort of queries on this chairperson, I believe that they must just take it up with the Auditor General's office. I think this is just by way of correcting things that might have been wrong. I think you can't really account, I think that's the essence of it. You can't, have this function and then account to the same accounting body. That is the essence of it. Now, Chair, I want to go to the AG report on 38 and 39. Here it is clear that the weakness, I think, in we may say so, is more in relation to predetermined objectives, that some of it was not measurable of the objectives and some of it were not smart, etc. So I think you should look at that and actually revise your strat plan, Jay, to go back to what we've suggested to you. So I would also like to suggest to Namisa to actually look at their strat plan and see if they can't simplify that. But and because that accounts for a poor achievement on planned targets. 58% is not a good score, and all I'm suggesting is that because you've got so many to attend to, you can't achieve it. The procurement seems to be a problem. There is a weakness there that you need to stop before it really becomes a major problem. So I think that is identified, and that links to the financial performance and management, which indicates that internal controls developed and implemented by management did not adequately identify and prevent non-compliance with applicable laws and regulations. So I think there, in terms of compliance, you really need to identify somebody who's your compliance officer or whatever to attend to matters so that you don't get negative, unnecessary, but some of these matters, because the Auditor General only works on a sample, it could open up opportunities for people, you know, to actually take some money away from the organization, which is really focused on the development of young people, which is a remarkable institution, and I think it must be very rewarding to work in that institution. Just the last issue, reimbursements and payments. I have not seen in the past that there was actually an allocation made for reimbursements for attendance of all the different committees, parliamentary committees, etc., etc. Is this a common practice? And if Mr. Veto could perhaps explain to us, other public entities, I'm on page 41, Chairperson. Do all public entities have this, or is it just that NAMISA is giving us all the juicy information that we didn't have from other entities? Could we please get that? And then, I've dealt with the issue of the plant and the rental. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honourable Schneemann.
Thanks, Chair. I've been partly covered by the inputs around targets not achieved, but I want to just draw attention to page 39 of the annual report. It's the Auditor General's report, and it does state there that 58% of planned targets were not achieved. So I'm just highlighting the actual percentage of targets not achieved, and that is worrying. That has to be worrying. I just wanted to check. A lot of my questions have been asked. I was going to say just firstly a comment really on page 30 of the annual report. You've got three people there who give their stories of how they've benefited from the training and the programs of NAMISA. Perhaps you should be looking at how you can more widely publicize such stories. Because if I can be really honest with you, if I wasn't in this committee, if I wasn't in Parliament, I wouldn't really know who NAMISA is. And I think that we would find that there's probably a lot more people who possibly could benefit from NAMISA's programs, but they don't, because they simply don't know who NAMISA is, let alone where they are. And I think maybe that's something that you need to be looking at. Maybe you need to look at how you work with members of Parliament to try and publicize NAMISA in their constituencies. It's just a point I wanted to raise, because I read these stories and they're very good stories, especially the one of the person who gained employment at MNET, and they were saying they were able to purchase their dream car. And I mean, I think that's a success story, because they've gained employment, which they would never have had otherwise. So I thought I should just make that comment. I just wanted to check and find out, I don't find anything in here, but maybe I have missed it. But in terms of contracts, staff contracts, do all your staff have signed contracts? Are they all signed? And if they're not, what would be the reason for that? Yeah, I think I'll stop there. Thanks, Chair. But maybe just to say that I think in terms of the entities that we deal with, I think NAMISA is the quiet one. And perhaps... And when I say it's the quiet one, perhaps maybe we should be focusing a bit more on the work that NAMISA is doing. But it's certainly the one that doesn't really appear on the radar screen of oversight a lot of the committee, certainly while I've been here. Maybe it has in the past. And if it has, then I would accept it. But maybe we should, going forward, pay a little bit more attention to the good work that's being done. Thanks, Chair.
They can invite us if they want to. We can put them up there on the run. No, thanks, Honourable Schneemann. Honorable Song.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson, and thank you for the report that we have received and read. Acting CE, I'm sure one of the good days will give us the progress in terms of the university. Remember the presentation that you made? It was very interesting, but very depressing second round. But I'm sure you will come back with a very interesting one in terms of the progress thereof. It's got nothing to do with the report. I'm just greeting you. Chair, probably one should say up front that at least somewhere within the current government, there are people that they understand why you are here, all of us. And we really appreciate that one. Of course, we have to ask you and make comments where are needed. But I'm sure, Chair, based on the previous presentation that you received and your remarks in terms of other things that you need to look at, I don't think we necessarily would like to encourage you, where I'm sitting, to review, continuously review your threat plan so that you can meet the targets. Because at the first place when you go for a threat plan and identify the targets, you know that you do have a capacity intellectually and otherwise in terms of executing those and achieve those targets. So I just want to raise that one. The issue also, Chair, that it shouldn't sound like it's the wrong thing when you attend any political study group. It's going to be a problem if you are not invited. We are servicing government, we are not a politician, so if there is information needed and you need to declare that, and there's nothing wrong with that. I thought I just need to deal with that. Chair, on page 37, probably let me pull light and not go to 37, start to 23. There, although they are not serious in terms of you are 23, 22, you are 20, all over, but also it goes to 25. There are issues where we say we did not achieve. Hence, my comment in terms of revising the strike plan, that I will have a problem. But I think there must be, like, for an example, page 25, Chairperson, demand creation in terms of the niche market. The shareholder combat, I think one of the colleagues have raised that one, not achieved. But also you'll have a problem when then your stakeholders, you are not precise in terms of who's your stakeholders and how you're going to engage with them and what relationship do we have with them. And I think that is critical for me. So I'm saying that the ones that you didn't achieve, I still want to know the reasons thereof. If you go to page 22, going back, just a simple thing, to undertake research and development. You are going to have two articles after you have done that. Lack of funding and capacity. But you should have known when you put this target that you don't have enough money. Probably it's a nice thing to do. But I'm sure there was a reason for you to say you are going to conduct a research. I'm just highlighting those things that sometimes while you are doing well, but you're not doing well. Okay. The other one, Chair, in terms of page 15, I must comment and say I think at least I'm happy in terms of procurement, sub-complement is called 100%, but also in terms of the Auditor General's observation, there's still some gaps. I'm not too sure whether people, in terms of the file tray, in terms of the workflow there, there is something wrong in terms of the skills capacity of the individuals doing that and what could be the causes thereof. Because it seems like we are very good on that. The other one, I was just looking in terms of under HR remuneration. I think you have summarized it in terms of the figures. I didn't see where it talks about the performance bonus and all that. Do we pay them or don't pay them? If we don't pay them, hallelujah. But also, I'm just checking that one because you can't pay also people who doesn't deserve to be given the performance bonus and all that. But we should, if we do, it should reflect that in terms of that. Other than that, Chair, I think the audit committees, though there are four, but I think the brains are there because also even the issue of buildings, Buildings don't do the work. Warm bodies do the work. You can be an informal settlement, but if you've got brains, you can still do the better job. Thank you, Chair.
I can see you are not copying. Sorry for that. Honorable Singh.
Thank you. Let me, first of all, let me just start right at the beginning. Let me touch on the issue about targets. It sounds bad and it looks bad, but I've actually looked at your individual targets, and I suspect that you've put on, and I wasn't part of the committee the previous year, so I don't know what your strategy plan was. But having looked at it, a lot of the ones that you've been unable to achieve was dependent upon additional funding. Now, you will have heard me talk to other entities about linking your targets to your budget. And I'd like to suggest, and I know somebody has said you should perhaps look at reviewing your targets as well, but what I want to suggest to Namisa is that you should have very specific targets linked to funding. You've got the funding, and that's what you're going to do with it. And then in addition to that, you have the other, almost a wish list, that should you get the extra funding, this is what you propose to do with it, which would certainly then, in terms of your reporting, look much better for you. But you don't lose track of the other things that you want to do. Because that's the impression I get if I look at most of them, not all of them, but most of them. They were subject to additional funding being obtained by the stakeholder. And that is the suggestion that I want to make to you. Because obviously if you don't get the funding, you're not going to be able to do it. The on page 7, though, something that interested me that I thought I should just query. You mentioned that your internal audit is currently outsourced. If you can just confirm that and then give us an indication, obviously one would like to, I don't know, perhaps being outsourced may not be such a bad idea, but being an internal audit, then they should be within the organization. Are there plans to, in fact, get the required skills so that you have your internal audit and not them being outsourced? Then moving on to, and while I'm searching the page, Chair, I remarked earlier to the chairperson that your budget is probably less at one than some of the other irregular expenditures that we've seen from the others, and that may be why we've got we don't have too many problems with you. The training and out of a total of 128 students, and you get an 83% success rate, pass rate, which is obviously good. But, you know, we often ask, what is the, besides the value, and the Honorable Schneeman spoke about it, there's some examples. But in order to enhance and in fact take it further, I get the impression that most of these students, 102 of them or something like that, we get confused with the numbers, were in fact 100% subsidized. Don't you get students from organizations within the industry that will sponsor a student to come and study with you so that the student then goes back, whether it's an MNET or a SABC or whatever, so that the funding that are given can go a little bit more, it can go further to the ones that simply don't have their opportunity to be funded. And because somewhere in the report, the acting CEO made the comment, and I fully understand it, that often one of the disadvantages are that because you're sourcing a lot of your students from the rural areas, the disadvantage is that when that student comes to you, that student is probably not at the level that he or she should be in terms of the education that he or she has received up to that point already. Now, in that regard, I want to again make a proposal to you that there should be some, you should start talking to the Department of Education, both higher education, and whereby If students are identified at an early stage, they've got an aptitude for something like this, that they be targeted to perhaps move out of your normal schooling earlier, so that they are much better prepared for this particular environment. So I just want to leave that with you as well. It would also obviously help with your success rate. I'm not going to go through the targets. I've said what I wanted to say there. Chair, I just want to turn to very quickly to the finances, although I'm not going to touch on the Auditor General stuff. My colleagues have covered that. You've got a deficit this year. Now, how do you intend to finance that deficit? Is the intention that it will purely come off your new budget? So in other words, your new budget will be reduced by the deficit. What is the agreement? Or what is the intention of how that deficit will be funded? Are you going to start with a deficit, or have you started in the new year? Then there was an adverse variance of 11 million. I actually couldn't get, it's under note 23 on page 68, Chairperson. But in the financial statement, there's nothing there that points to it, and certainly not to the note. I couldn't find anything that where note 23 was the additional information. I mean, it stopped at 22 in terms of the financial statements. So I couldn't link it to something in the statement specifically. But there's the mention there of the adverse variance of 11 million relating to other income, mainly due to the company not being awarded certain projects, again, from major stakeholders, including the Department of Communication. And it's perhaps something that I think you should engage the committee a little bit more with in future to when you've got issues like that with the department, because they should really be unless they believe that your targets that you've set and that they're supposed to fund are not worthwhile, they should, you know, at some point you should get some sort of agreement with them up front. And then I also wanted to know, the Honourable Killian asked about it. You, one of your targets was this plan about having your own campus. And I remember at one of the first presentations you gave us some information. It doesn't look like that's going to get off the ground. Certainly not in that 11-12 financial year. Perhaps if you could just touch on it very briefly of what the status is as of now. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Moroto.
I just wanted to comment, Chairperson, that you are very much inconsistent as a chairperson in identifying issues. I thought firstly you would tell us about Mr. Veso and Mr. Flach. As you told the gentleman. They seem to confuse us. They appear here and there. Yeah, Chairperson, you know, the picture that was drawn by the Auditor General was quite pleasant about Nemisa. Nevertheless, I just wanted to know and get clarity on some of the things that appear on the Auditor General's report on page 39. Maybe they can elaborate, and so that it becomes clear the performance indicators that are not well defined. And Honorable Stain has spoken about the targets. It says also the 45% of those targets, they had followed the strategic objectives, but they were not identifying the nature and the required level of performance. Why is it so? And I would go to the simple things that are here. But I need a chance. There's a pie here that is worrying me about the CEO outsourcing of the work. The 34% posts are filled and the 35% outsource. And again, a 33% outsource position. Maybe you can explain that to me. Because definitely, if you look at that, it will affect your finances. On page 9, on the suggested schedule of the entity, where is page 9 now? Yeah. I see here on the non-executive directors that Ms. Dube, out of the 7 meetings, has it attended 2, and Mrs. Majogweni 2, and also Mr. G. Lenepa has it attended 2 meetings. Otherwise, I also want to know the 3 meetings that are indicated that have been attended by everyone. Are you still expecting other meetings for this year to conclude the 7? I need that to be clarified so that we have a picture of what is happening. On your organogram on page 12, yes, I think you are doing very well in terms of the equity, but I'm also worried that most of the females appearing here are at a lower positions of management, except one lady, of course, who is the chief finance officer. And these blanks that I have here of the bookkeeper and procurement, are those blanks? Am I correct? They haven't been filled. Yes. And these seem to be important to drive the work of the entity. When are they? Are you intending to fill them? Thank you, Shepherdson.
Thank you. Honorable Shin, you want to chip in quick?
If I could, Chair, thank you. There was one question I forgot to ask, if I may. It's on page 67. Bearing in mind Namisa's strapped for money situation, I just wondered what inspired the payment of staff incentives worth 852,000 rand and nearly quarter million rands worth of bonus checks, which I presume the 13th check is. You know, how can we pay these things if the organization can't make its ends meet?
Thank you.
Dr. Chairperson, something which I forgot to raise is the seems to be a fairly high turnover of CEOs at NMISA. Nobody seems to stay for long, or certainly in the recent past. Is there a reason for that? And is this something that the almost said board, but is this something that's going to be looked at to ensure that we have stability in that office? And then, Chair, this is now a comment on a lighter side. So, but I noticed that.
Then you go to the darker side.
Yeah.
You can start the
It's more on a lighter side, so it's not to be taken too seriously, I suppose. But on page 41 of the annual report, there are 2 people who I see don't draw a salary at all and haven't been remunerated at all. And I'm just wondering whether this is an example that the rest will be following as well. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you.
example, a good example, somewhere there. Thanks very much, member. Oh, okay. Droga?
Thank you, Chair. I'm covered by most of my colleagues, but I want to ask the number of students. I know it's only 128. I know it's a few students, but when you get a better and a bigger campus, I want to know what are you going to do in future that you can have more students attending the MISA courses. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. At your team.
Thank you, Honourable Chair, and thank you, members, Honourable Members, for the comments and the vote of confidence, if I should call it that. Probably, maybe just so that I don't take the whole limelight. I'd also like the rest of my team to just chip in and answer certain questions. But some of the few things that you have raised and which the board has actually been hammering on and we're really looking to change is especially the target issue, the fact that it is a problem and we are looking into changing the way we set our targets and how to actually achieve them. But I must say that not that we want to make an excuse, but the issue of budget is actually a very important one, and we have looked at that. And like Honourable Member Steyn was mentioning, the fact that we should probably look at having set targets and also a wish list. That is the other thing that is of concern to us is the fact that we do have an acting CEO, and as you have mentioned that he appears a lot. So the board is also as part of the integration strategy that we will present at some point to you. We're looking to appoint a full-time CEO to actually, because we cannot operate with an, I don't know if I should say a half-warm board. There is a lot of work that we're also putting on to
do you mean that that vessel is half cold, half warm?
No. Lukewarm. We're also looking to try and market, come up with ways to market NEMISA and actually try and get the rest of South Africa to know about the good work that NEMISA is doing, about the graduates that are coming out of NEMISA and where they are. And I'm sure Mr. Takalani will also attest to that. But I'll just give the rest of my team to just answer some of your questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm his name, and I'm working there for free because because I'm so excited about, you know, the potential of the institution and the skilling of our young people for the 21st century. So so this half-warm body is there for free. I think honourable members, you've raised a number of very good points, interesting points. I think the target issue is of course, in the non-achieved targets. But I think there's a good explanation for that, and I think Steyn referred to it earlier this morning. Is, you know, it's really risky if you plan in anticipation of budget and human resource capacity. And I think what has happened in that financial year was that a strategy was developed, a new CEO, a permanent position was employed, and there was this anticipation that the DOC will fund and will and it didn't happen. And you will see, especially within within one of the focus areas, research, almost nothing has happened because there's also not internal capacity to have done that. So I think there was a bit of mismatch between capacity and resources. And I think that filtered through almost to everything that we've seen in the report. And that will be rectified, I think, with this whole integration, a new strategy for multimedia, creative media, creative industries, and so on. So the picture will change, and we will, like the chairperson indicated, we will come and present that new business plan, when we get the opportunity. So, but I think as far as the teaching is concerned, I think we try very hard within budget to make sure that our students, are not neglected, and that they get the best teaching that we can offer. So we now have to rectify that going forward. A number of issues will be dealt with by my colleagues, with of course personal experience with that particular period. The vacancy rate, I think I will ask Mr. Takalani to answer that. The shareholder concept, compact issue, I think as far as I know, and the CFO can respond as well, we don't actually need a shareholder's compact for a 3A institution. Let me say it's a 3A institution, so, but the CFO... Yeah.
Hey, you see, Dr. Vesso, you're putting yourself in trouble. Just respond and finish, and get the other ones to respond.
Yeah. Can you? Can you respond to that?
The when the cold side of your body comes in, but you can proceed.
I think the other question, the first number of questions dealing with the cut in lecturer fees, CFO, I think can you just please deal with that, and also I think the CEO can deal with the student accommodation and also the vacancy rate for now. So CEO, can you please deal with that?
Thank you, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members. I think maybe starting from what the acting CEO said, is true that when the strategy was developed, there was a new CEO who was just appointed, and the majority of board members were also new. So there was a lot of enthusiasm, that new things will be achieved, and unfortunately the convergence of planning between ourselves and the DOC did not see that through. In terms of the vacancy rate, the problems with the budget led us to hold back on some of the posts, but I would want to report that in fact the key posts as identified have been advertised, and we are about to fill those recommendations in terms of filling those posts, and for most of the posts in fact they fulfill the gender equity parity that we have. Coming to issue of student accommodation, and this really, I think, is taking on from what the chair has said. NEMISA overextended itself in terms of providing a service to underprivileged students. So you will see that our enrollment rate compared to the previous year was much higher. In fact, if you look at the facilities that we have in terms of teaching and learning, we cannot sustain that number. The secondary issue is that due to the fact that we've recruited students from outlying areas, you know, not focusing on urban areas, most of the students could not afford to pay their way through and had to be housed in paid for accommodation, hence the almost doubling of the accommodation costs, which means that the hostel that we have procured, we have to increase the number of students that we are housing there. So it is something that, you know, like the chair said, we need to look at how we cut our jacket, bearing in mind the amount of cloth that we have. In terms of the lecturer facilitator's fees, this goes hand in hand with the appointment of full-time lecturers. Facilitators' fees are categorized for those lecturers who come on a short-term closed contract to provide training. So if you have a decrease in that, you will have an increase in terms of staffing costs, because it means that we'll be using full-time staff to do that. And the reverse is also true. If our staffing costs will reduce, our facilitator fee costs will also increase, because it means that most of the lecturers will be working on closed contract short-term basis. The issue about lack of clarity on effectiveness of teaching, I think it's also one of the anomalies of how we put strategic objectives. Because you will notice that, in fact, our strategic objectives don't say anything about teaching and learning. And the assumption is made in the strat plan that teaching and learning is, you know, our core business. We will deal with that. We are highlighting and lifting issues that we thought NEMISA can grow into new terrain. And that is the anomaly, because we are not really reflecting the full complement of what we do. We are talking about wish lists that in most cases turned out not to be funded. The industry endorsed programs is about programs that industry would say there is a critical need and there is a shortage of skills. It does not reflect solely on programs that are developed for airing, either with the public broadcaster or commercial broadcasters. If that happens, it's because we will identify productions that would have opportunities for our graduates to have actual hands-on experience. So that is where you will find that training is linked to actual production and the productions will be aired. In the annual report, you will notice that there is a 52-episode series that we've completed called The Magic Cellar, which we are hoping will be able to generate revenue for NEMISA. And that is where you find the merging of skills between people who are experienced in industry, part of the team that was in the production of this series. We actually had people that volunteered from Canada. Because when NEMISA was founded, you know, there was a lot of contribution that we got from international experts who wanted to assist. And part of the legacy of that process is that the Canadians, who we worked with in developing our programs, volunteered to come and assist the students to complete this 52-episode series. So they also gain some leverage when they go into industry to seek for projects, because they will have some track record, you know, backed by quite decent exposure to professionals who are identified in the industry. How many of our students are employed? I can't give you a categorical response to that. But I would happily say that over half of our students would get employment. I would happily say that. In fact, even more, because what we provide is academic input that is coupled by hands-on experience. So we have a huge investment in terms of equipment, you know, software programs for things like editing. When I walk into the SABC, the public broadcaster, I get to meet a lot of NEMISA students because they are employment ready when they leave NEMISA. So, you know, they are attractive to commercial broadcasters, to the public broadcaster, community radio stations, because when they leave NEMISA, they need minimal training, on-the-job training, in order to be productive. I think on the issue of the regression in terms of supply chain, I'll leave that to the CFO. I agree in terms of the fewer targets. I agree. We made a mistake, and we've realized that it was a mistake. We'll correct that. The issue of a secure NEMISA campus, I think there was a lot of support that we got when we engaged with National Treasury, and they pointed out to us, you know, some potential where we can have facilities. They pointed out GCIS, higher education, basic education, but we'll follow up with National Treasury and those entities with regards to that. Because the bill that we have in terms of our budget spend, most of our expenditure really is on rental of property as well as payment of accommodation because we don't own the building. So if we could secure, you know, unused facilities that would be appropriate for a teaching institution, it would really make a lot of difference because it would free up a lot of the resources that we have into actual doing our core business. So that is why we're talking about having facilities so that we don't eventually end up using the money that is allocated for training to service facilities. I'm also going to skip the issue of the chairperson of BAC for the chairperson of BAC to respond to that. I think some of the issues were a repeat in terms of the weakness in the predetermined objectives, and we responded to that. It is true. The Honorable Sneeman raised the issue around the need for publicity. It is true. I mean, that is a given. We do, you know, I mean, the change in these young people's lives, it is so substantive. I mean, if you have a young child from a rural area in the Northern Cape, and you know that the social conditions around that child actually predetermine that they will not have employment. And you see them working for an international agency like, you know, some of our students who are working in Australia, not emigrated, but, you know, just as professionals who are selling their skills. It makes such a difference, and it gives us such joy to see this change in their lives that makes such a difference in their communities. But the problem is that even when I was appointed, I really didn't know NEMISA except when I saw the advert on the paper. And it goes for a lot of people that we work with, even in industry. If they've not been previously exposed to NEMISA, they do not know about NEMISA. I think part of the problem is that you have a vicious cycle where, because of limitations of budget, we can't really have a comprehensive marketing strategy in due consideration of the affordability of that. Because if you allocate to marketing, it means you are taking away from something that we would think this is critical for teaching and learning. Staff contracts. The staff contracts, how can I explain it, Chair, without getting into problems. As part of the reorganization of NEMISA, part of what we was identified by the board as a witness was that some of our HR policies were not compliant with legislation. And one of the areas was that the content of the staff contracts, in some cases, you would have contradictions where the contract will say something that contradicts, for example, the basic conditions of employment. Now, the principle is that staff contracts are secured, but the issue of handing them that document is where we are. It's a technicality. It does not mean that people whose contracts have not been extended. There is an in principle, maybe even an attempt to say we'll terminate their employment. There's nothing of the sort. It's just the technicalities of getting the compliance issues correct, so that when you offer somebody a staff contract, an extension of their contract, it should be compliant with the laws. And that process we've already started with that. CFO, I'm not sure if you want to take on some of the outstanding issues. I don't know, CEO.
Thank you, members. I just want to touch on this on the audit report from the Auditor General with regards to regression of the procurement. That this is the first time ever that we've had a regression in terms of procurement. And really, we accept that, you know, even if you look at our organizational structure the whole year, we didn't have a procurement administrator and we were filling out posts and all that, and it's no excuse. But there was actually a gap in our policy with regards to to one step of the 80-20 principle. That's where the irregular expenditure came from. So we took it upon ourselves to actually, from then on, put the measures in place so that it doesn't actually happen again. It's one thing that we pride ourselves in NMISA is because we actually turn each penny before we spend it. And we actually try to actually follow all policies and government policies and procedures. This was one that we'd actually overlooked, and we put measures in place as we speak to actually make sure that it doesn't occur again. And with regards to the deficit, how do we finance the deficit? How we finance the deficit is that in the past, because we are on an accrual basis, there are years that we had made profits, so those profits would actually be accumulated surpluses. So we would fund the deficits through accumulated surpluses. That's what happens. And you would find that if you look at the balance sheet on page, or the statement of financial position rather, on page 45, you'd see that our net accumulated surplus moved from 9 million to 5 to 3 million. That's how you would rather fund it. And most of it would be for non-cash items, for like example the depreciation and all of those ones that are not actually carried by the actual income coming in and out. So they would be funded through accumulated surpluses. One question about the provision, the provision was page 67, the bonuses, the provision for bonuses. It's rather a provision. It's not something that we paid out because the graph statements allows us that if you have a system in place, you have a performance management system in place. If you have a system in place, you somehow have contracts signed with employees, and somehow it raises expectations of, you know, that you're going to actually have this. So we have a system of calculating how much the provision, if we were to pay out the bonuses, how much it would be. It can be reversed based on board decisions. It can be paid out based on which part, because if you have 45% achievements, which means some departments have achieved, some haven't achieved, and what are the measures in place? We have a performance that says we have a performance management system in place, but it's just a provision. It goes also to the 13th check provision. Our employees, they have an option rather to get their salaries over 12 months, over 13 months. So we give them total cost to company. So we actually provide for the money that we haven't paid them over the month. So as at 31st March, we would have owed them money for January, February, and March that we have provided for. That's where the takings check provision comes from. And I want to touch on Dr. Vessel mentioned the shareholder compact on strategic objective. The third strategic objective of page 25, if you look at it, we actually came up with the strategic objectives, which to ensure the financial viability and institutional sustainability. This was one of the strategic objectives. Is what would UNEMISA need to do to actually make sure that, you know, we raise more money, because we've been coming to Department of Communications, to other government agencies asking for money, but we don't actually get the money that we want. One of the things was being expanded reach, being known around the government institutions, and the one being recognized by our own department, you know, them actually being our advocate, because if you're not supported by your own department, then it becomes a problem. So we came up with there should be some kind of a shareholder agreement, a shareholder compact, which we not by law in terms of Schedule 3A. We have a business plan and an APP, so we don't have to have a shareholder campaign. So, but we took it upon ourselves to say that we want to be recognized by our own department, and we have to have an agreement that if we have this kind of projects, when they have a content development project, when they have a national digital repository project where we could use our students to do this content, we could have an agreement whereby we should be their number one supplier or customer supplier, so they come to us instead of going out to other entities. So this is where it came from with regards to shareholder compact. We agree it was a wish list, something that's not required, but it's on the strategic plan, and it wasn't supposed to. On page 9, there was a schedule of meetings with regards to that we saw Mrs. Dube had some 3 meetings, and somewhere she didn't have she had 2 meetings or something like that. If you look at the schedule of meetings, you have meetings that are reported in terms of board audit risk management, and the HR committee. Not all non-independent, non-executives actually attend board and HR meetings. So they are not all members of each meeting, but they are all board members. So if you look at on page 9, the fourth column and the fifth column, it will say board, meeting convened, meetings attended. So all of them are board members. And then on the other columns, it would actually highlight if this person is a member of an audit committee or is a member of a HR committee, which are board committees. And with regards to there was a question also on the schedule of meetings that appears on page 41 with regards to reimbursements. On page 41, reimbursements, you'll find that there is on the right hand corner you have 2012. And on page 42, you also have it for 2011. Reimbursements, as an asterisk, we have those kind of reimbursement of payments for board members coming through to meetings like to Parliament Portfolio Committee. Our Minister's Directive for Schedule of Payments actually makes provision for those kind of things. So instead of hiding it, we rather actually show it around and what were we paying for transparency also. So it is a norm around other entities. We have bounced it with other entities if this is what they pay their members, and also it's on the minister's directive that that's how we should be paying our board members.
Okay, I think we have to deal with.
You've dealt with the adverse variance. You have to deal with that. The new campus, I think that is an interesting thing. What we talk about in developing this new model is that, you know, we're going to have a decentralized kind of model where we take education to the people, especially into deep rural areas. We heard this morning about all the Tusong centers and about the USASA centers, and we've done research now where we found, you know, these centers are
non-functional.
Yes, they connected, but not with appropriate technology. So we now know what kind of technology must be in these centers to make them functional. For example, if we say we can offer courses remotely, I mean, just imagine how you can reach into rural areas with offering courses remotely, if you can use e-learning technologies and so on. So we now know, and we've done a proof of concept. We've tested the technologies and we developed this virtual network. So that is why we work with USASA, the Celestia, and I've heard, you know, that if we upgrade what we have, we have to roll out, but also upgrade what we have to the right technologies. For e-learning to take place, you need at least 4 megabytes of connectivity. 256 will take you nowhere. So the thing is connected, but you can't use it. And people sit there and wait an hour for something to download and walk away. So we will have to look at these things. And only through pilots last year, 11-12, without campuses, without buildings of our own, we've reached more than 3,000 students and people across the country in urban, peri-urban, and rural areas just to test these approaches. So, and I think the role of the PCC is going to be a major role. I mean, in the new National Development Plan, it is stated by 2030, South Africa needs to be an e-literate society. Now, if we want to, and we've made some rough calculations, if we want to be an e-literate society, we need to impact the lives at different levels, from PhD to communities, of 10 million people over the next 5 years. So that is the kind of magnitude that we're talking about, and where the PCC as the driver of skills for the 21st century in this country will have to profile you know, the skilling of people in a totally different way. Now, we're working very closely with the Department of Education and Training, with basic education, with rural development, with our SOEs, to see how can we pool resources. Because there's so many things happening all over the country with little national impact. So if we talk about 10 million people, we need to stop with these little ad hoc fancy projects all over the place, and make sure that we impact on rural areas, on peri-urban areas, on disability issues, gender issues, on a national level. And I think that is many of the comments made by the honourable members are also related to this new model that we need to implement and where we're going with skilling. On page 23, the actual versus budgeted expenditure? No, 23? Yeah.
On actual versus budget expenditure note, there was a question that there isn't any link to the financials on that note. It's correct. In terms of the new graph statement that says that every time you have an actual money spent, you must have show budget and variance and explain at the end what is this, why do you have variances in terms of actual and money and budget. In terms, the graph statement does not prescribe how an entity can do it, so you'd find that each entity has a different way of doing. Some of the entities would put it right next to their financial performance. Some of them would put it actually as a note. But it's a new graph statement. It's not clearly defined. It only shows you that it's only
told you that you can only do it in terms of disclosure rather than presentation on the financials themselves. So that's why we have it at the end as a note.
There is something, of course, that we have to deal with, and that is part of our strategy to make sure that we get the gender balance right, we deal with disability in the department. So those are things we do consider in our appointments. There was an issue raised for the risk chairperson, risk committee.
I don't want to go into methods of interpretation of what the PFMA is saying, but the PFMA, the Companies Act, and the King Code of Ethics, they differentiate between an executive director and an independent director. An executive director is the director that involved in the day-to-day running of the organization. And an independent director is, it's like what he's saying, it's a member who...
He was not here, Honorable Chair. The humble Lemisa...
An executive board member.
Non-executive board member. I think it's going to be appropriate for us to tell you that we don't like schooling. The meanings of thereof and all the things, we create these institutions and we know. Probably if it's a matter of wedding, then just deal with that one.
Yes, I wanted to deal with it.
Yeah, but you just get agitated when you attend a school unaware that you are in a school. Thank you.
Morata? No, I just wanted to explain the chairperson of the audit committee issue. I don't know how best to explain it.
You are saying your understanding is in relation to how do you differentiate an executive board member and a non-executive board member? Okay, no, that's fine. Honorable Killen?
Chairperson, what I suggested was that is a treasury regulation as well. And what I suggested was that it must be taken up for the Auditor General, because I have actually made inquiries about that, and the Auditor General assured me that they are actually going to look at that because they realize that there is a problem as far as the entities are concerned. So all I suggest is just that the board just consults with the Auditor General's office to determine that, and if it is indeed true that it must be completely independent, not a board member, then they must just adjust that. So I just recommend it to them. So I don't think we need to deliberate on the matter. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other things left?
The issue around internal audit has been outsourced. Can you just deal with it? Oh.
Why do you seem to like outsourcing them, Lemisa? It's not the facilitator is an outsourcing. Sometimes we change the outsourcing to be facilitator who comes in. Okay, you know, it's fine. You can proceed.
Due to the size and the capacity of the organizations, and most organizations that are small like NEMISA, you would have your internal audit be actually outsourced. What the National Treasury Internal Audit Section Advisory actually suggests is that probably have only one member who can liaise with the outsourced company, so to speak. So we could look at actually having an one member in to actually coordinate the internal audit work of
of NEMISA. But it's actually quite a small entity. I mean, even the Auditor General audits us once a year. It doesn't even do interim audits because we're too small and our budget is too small, and it would actually quadruple our budget if they were to actually audit us twice. So the size of the entity, really, to actually have one person to coordinate all the departments and all the information, it wouldn't actually be beneficial to have a warm body paid money to actually coordinate the internal audit work. But we do have an outsourced company which gone through the tender procedures and it was awarded. And this company gives feedback to the executive management and is in attendance with in the audit committee. Thank you.
There was another hand, Honorable Roto.
Maybe just to explain the importance of the questions we are raising. You see, we are concerned because it might be a minor thing to you, but we have experienced a lot of things that people take advantage of. That's the reason why we need. It might be a small company, you think that it's a small issue, but it might have bad implications. That's the reason why I want to.
Thank you, Chair. I wasn't convinced by the response to our question about how effective the training was in the number of students who had graduated and had found employment. So I was wondering if it was at all possible for NEMISA to give us a list or some sort of chart or something or spreadsheet of how many students it's trained over the years and in what, and as far as possible, if we can determine how many of them are gainfully employed in the production industry, so we can have some idea of how, with whether there's actually bang for buck on NEMISA. Thank you.
Thank you. Anything you want to say to respond before we...
The changing CEOs all the time.
Normally, Centech CFOs have always changed. You are CEOs, Centech are CFOs. I don't know somewhere else what that is, but
I don't know if I can. Jefferson, whether you can answer it, I don't know.
What seems to be the problem with the CEOs changing?
They're changing almost like every year. Every 2 years, it's another CEO or an acting CEO, and there are reasons for that. So I will have to do a little bit of research on that.
Do you conduct the exit interview? Do you do the exit interview?
I don't know. CEO, whether there are any exit interviews in the past?
Yes, I can answer. Yes, we do exit interviews. We actually realized that a lot of people that we attracted CEOs into NEMISA are actually on demand in the market itself. So it's a constant battle for to keep and retain the skills.
And the market is
exactly. And also the...
Anything, members, before we go for lunch? Thanks very much, Chairperson of NEMISA, and your team, the other board members, and the executive members. Probably there are two issues which we need to deal with. Not now, moving forward. Why DOC choose not to give you the work, but you are part of DOC? It's a problem. We've reflected it somewhere. I think it's a matter which we must take part as a committee. That why DOC choose not to, but we are part of them and so on. I'm raising this matter because sometimes DOC seems to think that they are an implementing department, not a coordinating department. So it's a matter which probably need to take forward to understand why they choose to take the work which is assigned to you and choose to give to other institutions.
it's a critical matter. It's either DOC decide to shut you down as the minister so that they can give anyone else the work, but they cannot keep you idle and then take the work which you're supposed to do and want to do it themselves or to give. So it's a matter, probably Honorable Shin raised the matter to say it's probably issue about whether your program are appetizing or not, are relevant, the relevance of your program. Probably it's the other matter whether how relevant are your program in terms of the work of the DOC. But when the Director General of Communication yesterday was giving their annual report, she said you normally discuss and come together so that you come with your strategic plans, which I assume that when you develop your strategic plan in terms of what you want to do, the OC is quite aware of that. So the attitude all of a sudden then when it's supposed to do things then change the heart to do other things, probably it's a matter which at DOC we need to engage with DOC because it just does not help. The second issue is your SAPC. How are you being utilized by SAPC? Another public entity, how are they utilizing your services and so on. So that we need to understand those things so that we start to deal with them. Because including MDDA, how does MDDA utilize yourself? Because they are operating some that space of broadcasting and so on. So it cannot be just things will happen loose and people will wake up and do things. So we need to tie up that and understand clearly on those entities, what is their attitude towards them. I mean, it's just that it's a pity MDDA has passed already. But DOC is coming back again to the committee. SAPC is coming back this afternoon. So they will be able to tell us exactly around those particular matters, because these are key policy issues. You don't make policies and then you don't stick to them in terms of taking things forward. So SAPC, one first question I won't ask you to respond to it. How are you utilizing NEMIS on the part which they're supposed to develop the capacity of the public broadcaster in relation to your services and so on? Otherwise, thanks very much, Chairperson. Honorable Mruto? Oh, yes, the Deputy Chair will respond. How does he play his dual role? Including the CEO of MDDA when they come back after being something else. And so we are meeting at 2:15 at V454. We are moving out of here back to V454 where we were yesterday. Thank you. See you 2:15.